So we will give each one of you some batons that were made especially for this session in Bolivia, so you can hand them over to the new members of the Permanent Forum. Can you stand, new members, please, to receive your batons? A los que están. Sí, no, con la caja. Con la caja.
Quiera.
Sin la caja, sáquenlo para entregar.
Sí, pues se entrega todo
bien. A la gente.
Cualquiera. There's some others there as well. No, a mí, ¿no?
Allá, mira. Vení para que digas algo.
Dale a Willis, a Pavel, ese es Valmel, Valmel. Valmel. Pavel, dale a ver que la entrega.
Vaya.
Ay, mire, a la izquierda, Valmel.
Buenas tardes a los hermanos y hermanas. Para mí, como expresidente del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas, es una ocasión muy importante el poder hacer entrega del bastón de mando, que para los pueblos indígenas es tan importante el tener este símbolo, porque es un símbolo que nos compromete con nuestros pueblos indígenas también por la defensa de nuestros derechos. Entonces, a la hermana Mirna Cunningham, quien llevará adelante la dirección del Foro Permanente, un espacio tan importante por lo que el conjunto de los pueblos indígenas del mundo hemos luchado. Muchas felicidades, gracias. Mirna.
Gracias. Gracias. Tonya, would you like to say something to hand over? Tonya?
Nyaweha Skando, to all our relatives in this room and here with us today, as well as the esteemed representatives from governments. We have handed over our responsibilities to the next in line, so to speak, the following session, and to the Permanent Forum members. It is our pleasure and our honor, and I have turned over my talking stick and medicine pouch that I received from Chief Wilton Littlechild as I moved into the position as North American representative to Chief Ed John. We wish you much love and good luck.
Я буду говорить по-русски. Перевод. Я представляю коренные народы Российской Федерации, и от всех коренных народов, которые проживают в России, а это 40 коренных народов Российской Федерации, которые живут на севере Сибири и Дальнем Востоке, мы дарим постоянному форуму символ солнца, символ единения, символ земли. И я думаю, что постоянный форум будет именно тем символом, который будет объединять коренные народы мира во имя процветания, во имя будущих поколений, во имя того, чтобы наша планета Земля сохранилась и в будущем.
I would like to call now on the women from representations of the women from Latin America.
Está hermano.
Bueno, vamos a darle un regalo que se puede decir. Con esto va a hacer caminar, yo creo. Entonces, con eso va a hacer caminar a todos los, a todo el directorio. Bueno, muchas gracias. Felicidades a todo el directorio que está en estos momentos. Muchas gracias. Y va, aquí va a continuar.
Mirna, las mujeres, te entregamos este símbolo también para que una mujer asuma el poder con responsabilidad. Y somos guardianas y cuidadoras del agua y todo lo del medio ambiente. Y te vamos a acompañar en todo el proceso, así como los demás hermanos también. Hasta un Vicente.
Mirna. En nombre del pueblo Wayú, el tejido.
Gracias. Mujer del viento y del agua, de la tierra y del fuego.
Hermana Aymara, felicidades.
Lo mejor, compañera.
Te saludamos y te deseamos mucha suerte. Que el cuatro águila te bendiga siempre con esa doble mirada, con mucho pensamiento.
Te queremos mucho.
Felicidades.
Felicidades.
Me quedo los agendos. Albano, muchas felicidades.
Congratulations.
Now, I would like us to speak on some of the organizational arrangements for this session. Distinguished members of the forum, I am very pleased that this session of the forum has, as in previous years, drawn a large number of representatives from the indigenous people's communities. Given the large number of participants, I do hope to have full cooperation from all of you, so that members of the forum could hear the views of all the participants and thereon make appropriate recommendations to the Economic and Social Council. At this time, I would like to remind you of the following few points as regard our work in the course of the 10th session. On the issue of list of speakers, we shall follow the practice established in the forum at previous sessions. I would encourage the participants to submit all requests to make a statement or take the floor on each item to the secretariat. Since we have limited time for each substantive item, and in order to accommodate all those participants who wish to make statements, I intend to impose a time limit of 5 minutes or less for the observers of the session according to the number of speakers on my list for a given item. I would invite speakers to make concise statements and provide the secretariat with hard copies of the longer version of their statements if they wish to the conference room staff so that these statements could subsequently be posted on the website. In this connection, I should like to appeal to participants from Indigenous Peoples organizations to coordinate among yourselves in order to make consolidated group statements on the items under consideration. By group statements, I mean group of organizations present at this session. As we did at the previous sessions, I shall give priority to Indigenous parliamentarians, followed by caucus statements, umbrella organizations, joint statements, and individual organizations. Please note that you are allowed not to distribute your own statements. If you wish to have them distributed, kindly provide sufficient copies to the conference officers in the room. I would also remind participants that apart from addressing the formal meeting of the forum, there are many opportunities for participation in the session, such as side events, caucus meeting, and informal networking with the permanent forum and the numerous observers during the session. I hope that you will all take advantage of these opportunities. As a matter of courtesy, I appeal to the participants to kindly keep all consultation outside of the conference room in order not to disrupt the meeting. I would also kindly request those inscribing on the list of speakers to please form a line so as not to block the doors and to please keep our voices down so as not to disturb the meeting. Also, I would like to briefly advise that no food or drink is allowed in the UN conference rooms. Similarly, the use of cameras or visual recording equipment in conference room must be kept to a minimum so as not to disrupt the meeting or block the views of other participants. I would kindly request all participants to follow the established guidelines as directed by the conference officers. Thank you in advance for your cooperation. Please also remember that due to the renovation work at the UN headquarters, there is limited space in the conference rooms. The United Nations will issue special day passes in addition to the ground passes that all participants receive when you register. These special passes will be distributed in the visitors' lobby at the UN. There will be a limited number of special day passes according to the capacity of the conference room. In accordance with adapted program of work and as a follow-up to the recommendations of the permanent forum, we shall now proceed to deal with agenda item 3A, economic and social development. We will first have a statement by Commissioner Dina Shelton of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. You have the floor, Ms. Dina.
I would very much like to thank the Permanent Forum for inviting me to participate in this first day of the 10th session of the forum. In my dual role as President of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and as the rapporteur on the rights of indigenous people. I look forward to continued and increased collaboration between the Inter-American Human Rights System and the Permanent Forum. Indigenous peoples in the 35 member states of the Organization of American States are currently facing severe threats to their very existence, posed by external factors that include armed conflict and political violence, poverty, dispossession of their lands and territories, social exclusion and marginalization, structural discrimination, and environmental degradation. The Commission has described in its reports that indigenous peoples in the Americas, individually and as groups, continue to be systematically excluded from the social, economic, and political life of their countries to the detriment of their well-being and development. Marginalization and exclusion are reflected in much lower levels of participation and representation in public institutions and decision-making bodies, lower levels of access to employment and education, geographical and socio-political distance from the decision-making centers and from state authorities, and racism within society and government. Generalized patterns of poverty and exclusion even lead to situations of contemporary slavery in which entire indigenous communities are forced to live in conditions of servitude. Labor exploitation, including underpayment, mistreatment, and lack of social benefits, are the general rule in some countries. A recently published report of the Commission assessed the situation of the so-called captive communities of the Guarani indigenous people subjected to conditions of debt bondage in Bolivia. The government of Bolivia has been working with the Commission since the publication in order to put an end to this intolerable situation, but the obstacles have been many and the problems remain. The integrity of ancestral indigenous territories is under massive threat from economic and strategic interests seeking the immense natural resources that these lands hold. Powerful transnational enterprises invade with the support of the national government. Despite formal recognition of indigenous peoples' territorial rights in domestic law, they have been and are still being progressively deprived of their ancestral lands and prevented from having access to the natural resources from which they derive their livelihood. In other instances, they are exposed to environmental degradation that further thrusts them into a situation of poverty and need. The enjoyment of human rights is further limited by lack of prior, full, and informed consultation before public and private activities are undertaken, including those involving extractive industries and hydroelectric projects, by intercommunity conflicts over property and access to lands and resources, and by generalized violence or armed conflict in or surrounding indigenous areas. Cases brought by indigenous people to the commission over the last 5 years have dealt with arbitrary executions, arrests, forced disappearances, massacres, forced displacement, and other serious crimes. Exclusion of indigenous peoples is also evident with regard to their lack of access to justice and in the prevailing patterns of impunity for violations of their human rights. Compensation for victims remains unfulfilled. On the positive side, there has been a trend to adopt favorable legislation and constitutional provisions during the past 2 decades to recognize and protect indigenous rights. In practice, however, these reforms have not resulted in effective enjoyment of rights because of the lack of enforcement and implementation. Since its creation, the Commission has paid special attention to the protection of indigenous peoples in the Americas. In 1971, the Commission declared that indigenous peoples have a right to special legal protection. In 1972, the Commission added that states have a sacred obligation to protect indigenous peoples in their territories for historic reasons and because of moral and humanitarian principles. Since then, the Commission has dealt with many cases related to the protection of individual and collective rights of indigenous peoples throughout the Americas. In 1990, the Commission created the Rapporteurship on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Rapporteurship and the Commission protects and promotes indigenous peoples through its different instruments and functions, including the individual petition system, which deals with specific cases, granting of precautionary measures in urgent and serious cases, producing special reports, such as the report on the situation of the mosquito population in Nicaragua, the report on the indigenous peoples in resistance in Guatemala, and on the captive communities in the Bolivian Chaco. We also produce specialized in-depth studies on particular topics, most recently our landmark report on indigenous and tribal peoples' rights over their ancestral lands and natural resources. Within our comprehensive assessments of the situation in various countries, we've reported on indigenous situations in Bolivia, Colombia, Guatemala, Ecuador, Paraguay, Brazil, Venezuela, Peru, and Mexico. We litigate cases before the Inter-American Court and generally monitor the situation of human rights of indigenous peoples in the Americas. We've been working on the elaboration of the draft American Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. We currently have over 100 individual petitions at different procedural stages and approximately 100 requests for precautionary measures that have come from OAS member states with indigenous populations. These deal with individual and collective rights of indigenous peoples. The achievements of the 20 years of the rapporteurship have been many. Perhaps the most memorable moment occurred on December 14, 2008, when the government of Nicaragua conveyed to the Awistinjni community the property title to 73,000 hectares of its ancestral lands. This marked a critical step forward in the resolution of a case that the Commission had taken to the Inter-American Court in 1998. It was the first case on indigenous people's collective property rights that the court heard and judged, and the 2001 judgment was a milestone in the recognition of the territorial rights of Indigenous peoples. One of the main challenges today for Indigenous leaders, lawyers, and activists, particularly in North America, is to become more familiar with the Inter-American human rights system and aware of its potential to contribute to making a real difference on the ground. We can help, but we also need your help. Governments are not always happy with the decisions of the Inter-American Commission, and we are under a considerable pressure from some currently. So we hope to make the system more transparent, and as I said at the outset, to collaborate with the Permanent Forum to address the issues of highest priority to Indigenous peoples in this hemisphere. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Commissioner Dina Shelton, for your statement. And we surely expect to work more in collaboration in the future with the Commission. Thank you. We will now hear the report of the Special Rapporteurs on Indigenous Peoples and Corporations and the study of the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples' Models of Development. After these reports, I will open the floor to the participants inscribed on the speaker's list to make your statements. To introduce the theme of reviewing recommendations of social and economic development, I would like just to highlight some things. El desarrollo económico y social es uno de los seis ámbitos del mandato del foro permanente. En los nueve periodos de sesiones, se han formulado aproximadamente 173 recomendaciones sobre una amplia gama de asuntos relacionados con desarrollo económico y social. En su mayor parte, esas recomendaciones han estado dirigidas a los organismos del sistema de las Naciones Unidas y los gobiernos. Las recomendaciones adoptadas se enmarcan en varios de los artículos de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, como por ejemplo el artículo 3, que estipula que el derecho a la libre determinación, y el artículo 23, que enuncia que los pueblos indígenas tienen derecho a determinar y a elaborar prioridades y estrategias para el ejercicio de su derecho al desarrollo. A lo largo de estos años, el Foro Permanente ha recomendado reiteradamente a los organismos de las Naciones Unidas, las instituciones financieras internacionales y otros agentes del desarrollo que modifiquen sus paradigmas y sus enfoques respecto a la labor con los pueblos indígenas, considerando el respeto del principio del consentimiento previo, libre e informado, el reconocimiento de los derechos colectivos, una mayor participación de los pueblos indígenas en la elaboración, ejecución y supervisión de los programas y un mayor presupuesto para los programas que conciernen a los pueblos indígenas. En este sentido, pueden evidenciarse algunos avances. Por ejemplo, el Fondo Internacional de Desarrollo Agrícola, FIDA, finalizó en 2009 su política sobre las relaciones con los pueblos indígenas. Y en 2010, la Organización de las Naciones Unidas para la Agricultura y la Alimentación, FAO, aprobó su política sobre pueblos indígenas y tribales, sumándose así a otros organismos como el PNUD, el Banco Mundial, el Banco Asiático, el Banco Interamericano de Desarrollo, el Banco Europeo, que tienen una política concreta sobre los pueblos indígenas. Considerando que uno de los aspectos fundamentales de las recomendaciones del foro apuntan al establecimiento de mecanismos efectivos de participación en la formulación de programas, es destacable la tendencia del establecimiento del Foro de Pueblos Indígenas, por ejemplo, en IFAD, así como comités consultivos indígenas en los equipos de las Naciones Unidas en los países y a nivel regional. UNICEF ha sido pionero en establecer un órgano consultivo con lideresas y líderes indígenas para brindar asesoramiento respecto a la programación en América Latina y el Caribe. Siguiendo el ejemplo de otros países inicialmente en Ecuador, Bolivia. Recientemente el equipo de las Naciones Unidas en Nicaragua ha establecido un grupo consultivo sobre pueblos indígenas. A lo largo de las diversas sesiones, el foro ha prestado particular atención a la participación, representación de los pueblos indígenas en los procesos de cumplimiento de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio. Si bien algunas organizaciones indígenas hemos podido participar en la cumbre de 2010 sobre los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio y en el documento final de la reunión plenaria de alto nivel de la Asamblea General, se hacen 6 referencias a los pueblos indígenas, reafirmando que los estados deben tomar medidas concertadas y positivas para garantizar el respeto de todos los derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas sobre la base de la igualdad y la no discriminación. Es importante resaltar que muy pocas organizaciones indígenas han participado y participan en el diseño y ejecución de programas relativos al cumplimiento de los ODM en sus países. En este sentido, es necesario volver a recalcar la preocupación que el Foro Permanente viene expresando al afirmar que algunos procesos encarados por los estados para cumplir los ODM pueden llevar a la pérdida acelerada de nuestros territorios y recursos naturales, más aún a la pérdida de nuestros medios de subsistencia y al desplazamiento, así como a la acelerada asimilación y la erosión de la cultura de nuestros pueblos. Asimismo, quisiera también reiterar que no se pueden cumplir los ODM sin la plena participación y empoderamiento de las mujeres indígenas y el respeto a sus derechos humanos, siendo necesario crear y reconsiderar las mayores condiciones para el ejercicio de sus derechos sexuales y reproductivos, el acceso universal a la salud materna y a una vida sin violencia. Por último, el Foro Permanente ha dedicado mucho trabajo al tema de la recopilación y el desglose de los datos, ya que este tema guarda estrecha relación con el desarrollo económico y social. Los datos son decisivos para determinar y vigilar la situación y los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. En consecuencia, el foro ha emitido recomendaciones sobre este asunto en todos sus periodos de sesiones. El Foro Permanente ha puesto de relieve la función central que desempeña la Declaración de la ONU sobre el Derecho de los Pueblos Indígenas al afirmar que los derechos y aspiraciones de los pueblos indígenas, y ha solicitado al Sistema de las Naciones Unidas que preste apoyo financiero a los pueblos para consolidar sus propios modelos, conceptos y prácticas de desarrollo, retomando una de las recomendaciones del periodo de la sesión del periodo del año pasado. Sin embargo, seguimos observando con preocupación que los pueblos indígenas estamos desproporcionadamente representados entre los pobres y extremadamente pobres. Nuestros niveles de acceso a servicios de educación y salud están muy por debajo de los promedios nacionales y nuestras comunidades son especialmente vulnerables a las consecuencias del cambio climático y de la degradación ambiental. Apelo, por lo tanto, en esta oportunidad a que todos los actores presentes, colegas y miembros del Foro Permanente, líderes y lideresas indígenas, representantes de los estados, agencias de Naciones Unidas, instituciones financieras, entre otros, a que aunemos esfuerzos para lograr el mayor compromiso posible en el debate y las recomendaciones que vamos a adoptar sobre el tema de desarrollo económico y social. Quisiera ahora, I would like now to give the floor to Special Rapporteur Mr. Carlos Mamani to present the report on Indigenous People and Corporation as contained in document EC-19-2011-12. Mr. Mamani, you have the floor. You can find him. Okay. So, if Mr. Mamani is not now in the room, We will ask Mr. Pavel Zuliansiga to present an oral report on Indigenous Peoples' Model of Development, in line with the theme Development with Culture and Identity. Mr. Pavel.
Большое спасибо, господин председатель. Во-первых, я хотел бы поздравить вас с избранием на пост председателя постоянного форума, который накладывает, помимо всего прочего, большие обязательства по работе и организации нашей сессии. Если вы позволите, уважаемые друзья, уважаемые дамы и господа, я свой доклад разделю на две части. Дело в том, что данный доклад мы с моими коллегами Карлосом Мамани и Элизой Канкуи представляли на 9-й сессии постоянного форума ООН. Однако, как показала жизнь, эта проблема становится все актуальнее и актуальнее. С учетом проведенных исследований за прошедший год мы добавили некоторые новые выводы относительно сложившейся ситуации. И как я уже сказал, я хотел бы построить свой доклад немножко не совсем обычно, разделив его на две части. Дело в том, что сегодня по моему приглашению в нашей работе принимает участие главный исполнительный директор компании «Сахалин Энерджи» господин Галаев, который любезно принял приглашение поучаствовать в нашей сессии. И я думаю, что для представителей коренных народов будет очень важно услышать голос представителя бизнеса, который работает на территориях коренных народов. Более того, я хотел бы сказать, что, исследуя эту проблему, мы признали, что компания «Сахалин Энерджи» работает по тем международным стандартам, которые сегодня установлены в мире, соблюдая права коренных народов. Итак, если вы позволите, я сначала предоставлю слово господину Галаеву, а потом остановлюсь на тех выводах и исследованиях, которых мы провели. Пожалуйста. Сергей Викторович.
Большое спасибо, Павел Васильевич. Да, большое спасибо, Павел Васильевич, за предоставленную возможность, госпожа председатель. Уважаемые дамы и господа, действительно для меня огромная честь сегодня представлять и мою страну, Российскую Федерацию, на этом форуме Организации Объединенных Наций и бизнес на этом совещании по вопросам коренных народов. Ну, приятно, конечно, нам осознавать, что эта честь является признанием результатов той многолетней кропотливой работы, которую наша компания ведет в сфере эффективного взаимодействия с коренными жителями севера Сахалина. Социальная ответственность компании – это на сегодняшний день императив. Она распространяется и на гуманитарную деятельность, и на благотворительность, и на поддержку образования и здравоохранения. Способствуя устойчивому развитию территории, социальная деятельность, в свою очередь, помогает и бизнесу, который, получая в ответ поддержку со стороны населения, способен работать с большей эффективностью. Но выгода здесь взаимная, и можно сказать, что без высокой корпоративной культуры, опирающейся в первую очередь на социальную ответственность, у бизнеса нет хороших перспектив сегодня. Стремясь к устойчивому развитию острова Сахалин, где мы живем и работаем, мы стараемся уделять внимание наиболее уязвимым сферам сегодняшней социальной жизни. Одна из них – это развитие коренных малочисленных народов. Первые жители Сахалина несут в себе колоссальный жизненный потенциал. Вот. Их, конечно, закалила и суровая природа острова, и трудности выживания, и сохранения национальной и культурной идентичности, с которыми они столкнулись в 20 веке. Однако сегодня придерживаться традиционного уклада жизни делается все сложнее. В эпоху глобального распространения информации, развития технических средств и стремления людей в города легко теряются культурные традиции. С развитием средств массовой информации, коммуникации, интернета не выдерживают острой конкуренции даже языки малых народов. Вот поэтому компания «Сахалин Энерджи» поставила перед собой задачу способствовать как развитию коренных малочисленных народов Сахалинской земли, улучшению их положения в сферах здравоохранения и образования, так и сохранению их самобытной культуры. Эта работа началась почти 20 лет назад, в 1994 году, то есть с первых дней деятельности компании на острове. Мы считаем большим достижением то, что сегодня, благодаря усилиям нашей компании, эта работа носит характер стройной и продуманной системы. Вот, кто знает потребности коренных народов лучше, чем они сами? А как задействовать местные административные ресурсы, если не при помощи правительства этого региона? Вот, понимая это и стремясь использовать все возможное для того, чтобы сделать работу во благо коренного населения наиболее эффективной, компания «Сахалин Энерджи» выступила инициатором разработки уникального трехстороннего плана содействия развитию коренных малочисленных народов Севера Сахалина. Вот, в ходе разработки этого плана проводились активные консультации с представителями коренных народов, а в реализации принимают участие три страны. Это региональный совет уполномоченных представителей коренных малочисленных народов Севера Сахалина, это правительство Сахалинской области и наша компания «Сахалин Энерджи». Вот, партнерство трех сторон, которые являются участниками плана содействия, это как раз является свидетельством того, каких успехов можно добиться при условии и доброй воли, и желании бизнеса, власти и коренных народов сотрудничать. Ведущую роль в этом партнерстве играют представители коренных народов, которые сами определяют круг задач, которые должны быть решены в рамках нашей совместной работы. За первые 5 лет реализации плана с 2006 по 2010 года компанией поддержано более 300 проектов, направленных на поддержку традиционной экономической деятельности и социальное развитие, на поддержку культуры и образования и на сохранение языков и развитие потенциала коренных народов. Это три направления, которые являлись основными вот в эти годы. В 2010 году уже разработан второй план содействия, рассчитанный на 2011-2015 года, и сегодня полным ходом идет его реализация. Здесь очень важно отметить, что этот план подготовлен в соответствии с принципом свободного, предварительного и осознанного согласия, провозглашенного в Декларации ООН о правах коренных народов 2007 года. Вот. А в ходе подготовки этого плана проводились широкие открытые консультации с коренными народами Севера Сахалина во всех районах их традиционного проживания. Вот. В настоящее время в рамках плана действуют две программы – поддержки традиционной экономической деятельности и социального развития. Обе программы полностью управляются представителями коренных малочисленных народов, избранных от каждого района традиционного проживания коренных народов Сахалина. А за реализацией плана осуществляется постоянный мониторинг, и его обеспечивает международный независимый эксперт. Вот. Нашей компании и живущим на острове Сахалин коренным жителям предстоит достаточно долгий совместный путь. Мы соседи и партнеры, представители одного и того же региона, и нам предстоит достичь очень многого. Но один вывод мы можем сделать уже сейчас. Вот по нашему мнению, нам удалось создать четкую и устойчивую платформу для взаимодействия с коренными жителями Сахалина. Вот эта платформа, на мой взгляд, может послужить моделью взаимовыгодного сотрудничества бизнеса и коренных малочисленных народов в глобальном плане. И, возможно, это самый главный результат нашей совместной работы. Благодарю за внимание. Спасибо.
Thank you for your presentation. If there are any questions to the reporter on the experience that you have shared. Do you have any questions? Mr. Pavel, can you conclude there?
Спасибо, уважаемый госпожа председатель. Я хотел бы очень коротко дать обзор тех исследований, которые мы проводили вместе с моими коллегами по постоянному форуму. Цель настоящего исследования состоит в том, чтобы помочь коренным народам осознать и увидеть собственную перспективу, осуществить собственный выбор взаимоотношений с промышленными компаниями, работать совместно с госучреждениями и представителями бизнеса для получения тех выгод, которые связаны с реализацией промышленных проектов на их землях и территориях. Я думаю, что тем, кто захочет ознакомиться с нашей работой, они могут посмотреть его в документах постоянного форума. Я хотел бы сказать очень кратко о следующем, что в исследовании также были приведены ключевые международные правовые документы и стандарты в области защиты прав коренных народов, принципы переговорных процессов, опыты различных стран. Сразу хотел бы подчеркнуть, что наибольшую информацию о положительном опыте мы получили от правительства Канады. Пользуясь случаем, я также хотел пригласить всех на сайд-эвент, который будет проходить 18 мая, на котором коренные народы России совместно с представителями органов государственной власти России и Канады, промышленными компаниями поделятся своим положительным опытом сотрудничества и взаимодействия. Коренные народы переживают сегодня очень сложный, а некоторые народы критический этап в новейшей истории человеческой цивилизации. С одной стороны, разрабатываются и реализуются широкомасштабные промышленные проекты практически во всех регионах мира, связанные в первую очередь с новым освоением природных ресурсов и призванные способствовать экономическому развитию стран и народов. С другой стороны, идет небывалое колоссальное изъятие и сокращение территорий традиционного хозяйствования, священных мест, пастбищ, охотничьих и рыболовных угодий коренных народов, которые, безусловно, окажут негативное воздействие на экономическую, культурную и духовную жизнь коренных народов. Для некоторых это создает реальную угрозу этническому существованию. Благополучие и будущее этих народов напрямую будет зависеть от продуманной политики государства, от реализации политических и экономических прав коренных народов, подкрепленных мероприятиями по развитию их человеческого потенциала, укреплению традиционных хозяйств, защиты окружающей среды и регулированию отношений коренных народов с промышленными компаниями. Сравнительный анализ политики различных государств по так называемому присоединению новых земель и освоение их ресурсов показал, что на определенном этапе эта политика повсеместно трансформируется в политику доминирования и патернализма в отношении коренных народов и их ассимиляции. Такая политика сопровождалась отчуждением коренных народов от своих территорий и ресурсов, потерей контроля над их использованием. Системным результатом такой политики стали острые социальные проблемы коренных народов, экономическая и социальная апатия, потеря ценностных ориентиров, чувство безнадежности и бессмысленности жизни, алкоголизм и суициды. Социальные проблемы при этом превращаются в факторы, препятствующие включению коренных народов в проекты развития и очень часто используются как доказательство объективности процессов ассимиляции и отсутствия альтернатив политике патернализма. Возникает замкнутый круг неблагополучия коренных народов, из которого не выбраться без изменений всех условий, которые определяют это неблагополучие. Новые модели отношений с коренными народами получили развитие в начале 70-х годов 20-го столетия. За прошедший период коренные народы реализовали право на самоуправление в форме общественного управления территорией, такие как самоуправление Гренландии, северный склон Аляски, Нунавут как территория на севере Канады, а также аборигенного управления. Развивающейся формой реализации интересов саами в Норвегии, Швеции и Финляндии стали саамские парламенты и советы и особые права в сфере оленеводства. Что касается моей родины, то я хотел бы сказать несколько слов. Острые проблемы неблагополучия коренных народов российского севера, связанные с экологическими издержками освоения минеральных ресурсов, а также процессами отчуждения коренных народов от земель, ресурсов и управления промышленным развитием северных регионов, стали предметом активного осмысления и изучения в последние два десятилетия. И напоследок я хотел бы сказать последний один вывод, который мы привнесли в наше исследование в течение этого года. Сравнение разных опытов показывает, что соглашение о выгодах между коренными народами и промышленными компаниями могут работать только в общей политике государства, направленной на преодоление последствий патернализма. Ключевыми мерами, изменившими ситуацию в корне и отношение людей к жизни, стали признание и реализация неотъемлемых прав коренных народов на землю, природные ресурсы и территориальное самоуправление. Если соглашения становятся частью системы государственной политики, то они реально способствуют решению проблем, росту и диверсификации экономики коренных народов и включению в процесс управления развития. Это означает только одно, что без вдумчивой, кропотливой разработки государственных политик внутри каждой страны невозможно будет решить те проблемы, о которых мы говорили в наших исследованиях. Я хотел бы выразить еще раз признательность своим коллегам Карлсу Мамани и Элисе Канкуи, сотрудникам постоянного секретариата постоянного форума, своим коллегам из Ассоциации коренных народов Севера Российской Федерации, Центра содействия коренным народам Севера, а также нашим канадским коллегам и друзьям. Спасибо.
Thank you, Mr. Sulianziga. Now I will open the floor with the list of So I will invite Mr. Jean-Francois Tremblay, the Senior Assistant Deputy Minister, Indian and Northern Affairs of Canada. You have the floor.
Madam Chairperson and members of the Permanent Forum, Canada would like first to congratulate the Permanent Forum for its 10th anniversary today, a milestone for this important body. Canada would like also to welcome the new members of the Forum, and in particular, welcome Grand Chief Edward John, the new Indigenous nominated for representative for North America. The Government of Canada is pleased to continue its long and consistent practice of participation, contribution, and support to the work of the Permanent Forum. Canada is supportive of all the mechanisms of the United Nations dedicated to Indigenous issues. It has been our practice to provide extensive information to the Permanent Forum, special procedures, including the Special Rapporteur on Rights of Indigenous People, treaty monitoring bodies, and other institutions on Canada's approaches and on success and challenges on Indigenous issues. Canada will continue to do so. Canada is pleased to note its endorsement of the UN Declaration on Indigenous Rights on November 12, 2010. It was done to further strengthen Canada's relationships with First Nation, Métis, and Inuit, and because Canada believes that the Declaration has the potential to contribute positively to the promotion and respect of the rights of Indigenous peoples around the world. Today, Canada would like to respond on a thematic sense to issues raised and recommendations made by the Forum on Economic and Social Policy, or Development, sorry. Concernant le développement économique, le gouvernement du Canada continue à aller de l'avant avec le cadre fédéral pour le développement économique des Autochtones. Ce cadre, qui découle de nombreuses discussions avec des partenaires de partout au pays, représente une approche moderne et complète visant à permettre aux hommes et aux femmes des Premières Nations, Inuits et Métis, de tirer profit de la prospérité du Canada. En éducation, le Canada et les organisations autochtones ont fait de l'éducation une grande priorité. Nous savons que de meilleurs résultats scolaires contribuent au bien-être individuel et collectif, augmentant la participation à la vie active, favorisant l'inclusion sociale et améliorant les conditions socio-économiques. Pour promouvoir cette priorité, le gouvernement du Canada et l'Assemblée des Premières Nations ont annoncé la création d'un panel national chargé de réfléchir à des solutions, y compris des mesures législatives, en vue d'améliorer les résultats à l'école primaire et secondaire des élèves des Premières Nations vivant dans les réserves. Cela s'ajoute à d'autres investissements réalisés en vue de soutenir une réforme de l'éducation des Premières Nations. Le gouvernement du Canada demeure également déterminé à soutenir les Autochtones en ces temps économiques difficiles, au moyen d'investissements ciblés visant à améliorer le développement des compétences et l'employabilité et pour les aider à obtenir des emplois à long terme. D'importantes contributions à ces objectifs sont faites dans le cadre de la stratégie de formation pour les compétences et l'emploi destinée aux Autochtones, une initiative nationale sur 5 ans qui aide les Autochtones à se préparer à l'emploi et à obtenir et à conserver un travail. In relation to health, the Government of Canada annually invests over $2 billion to fund a range of health programs and services for First Nations and Inuit, including primary health care, home and community care services, and health and promotion disease prevention programs. Furthermore, in 2010, a five-year funding commitment of $730 million was announced to renew key Aboriginal health programs that address high rates of diabetes, reduce risk, and increase protective factors for youth suicide and mental illness, and support families with infants and young children. Madam Chairperson, Canada is also implementing policies and programs aimed at improving the socioeconomic situation of Aboriginal peoples in urban areas. Through the Urban Aboriginal Strategy, Canada is working with urban Aboriginal communities, federal, provincial, and municipal governments, Aboriginal organizations, and private and nonprofit sectors to develop local solutions to local issues. Canada is working with provinces and municipalities to align investment, strengthen the planning capacity of urban Aboriginal communities, and develop a policy framework for program renewal. Enfin, Madame la Présidente, le Canada reconnaît que la mise en place de gouvernements autochtones compétents et responsables, soutenus par des institutions adéquates, est un facteur clé dans l'amélioration du développement social et économique, et que les gouvernements sont un fondement à la participation des Autochtones à l'économie. Les collectivités qui font preuve d'une bonne gouvernance sont mieux à même d'attirer les investissements et donc d'accroître leur autonomie. Le Canada est également conscient que relever ces défis socio-économiques auxquels sont confrontés les Autochtones est une incidence sur plusieurs facteurs. Pour obtenir des résultats, le Canada met en place des partenariats afin de mettre en œuvre des approches qui favorisent l'innovation et les solutions locales. Par exemple, le Canada, la province du Manitoba et la ville de Winnipeg ont conclu récemment une entente de collaboration afin de travailler ensemble sur des mesures et des mécanismes permettant d'améliorer les résultats socio-économiques des Autochtones qui vivent à Winnipeg et la capacité des organisations autochtones. De plus, le Canada, le gouvernement de la Saskatchewan et les cinq conseils tribaux de sept provinces qui représentent plus de la moitié des 70 premières nations de la Saskatchewan, ont conclu un protocole d'entente historique en vue de travailler ensemble à accroître la participation des premières nations au marché du travail, y compris par le biais de mesures actives. Pour terminer, le gouvernement du Canada et de la Colombie-Britannique et le Conseil de santé des premières nations de la Colombie-Britannique ont récemment paraphé un document mettant en place les fondements d'un accord cadre sur la gouvernance de la santé. Cette entente de principe prévoit les grandes lignes de la négociation d'un accord juridique sur la gouvernance des Premières Nations en matière de santé. Madame la Présidente, beaucoup reste encore à faire, mais nous espérons que ces mesures contribueront à améliorer le bien-être économique et social des collectivités autochtones canadiennes. Merci, j'essaie de me retrouver ma voix.
Thank the representative of Canada for your statement, and I give the floor to Doña Otilia Lux, de Coti, Indigenous Parliamentarian from Guatemala.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Como parte del Parlamento guatemalteco, pero también mi voz se alza a nombre del Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas. Distinguido miembro del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas, distinguido representante de los Estados miembros, Agencia de las Naciones Unidas, líderes y lideresas indígenas, distinguidos representantes. Como Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas, red internacional que articula organizaciones regionales y nacionales de América, Asia y África, quisiera en primer lugar felicitar a la hermana Mirna Cunningham como nueva presidenta electa del Foro Permanente y expresar nuestro apoyo y compromiso a su gestión. En esta sesión, donde el Foro Permanente estará analizando las recomendaciones sobre desarrollo económico social, es importante resaltar que las mujeres indígenas contribuimos a las economías nacionales con el manejo y protección de los recursos naturales, la producción de alimentos y la soberanía alimentaria, la atención a la salud reproductiva, la transmisión de saberes tradicionales, el cuidado de los niños, niñas y mayores, entre otros aspectos. Sin embargo, aún el día de hoy, cuando se trata del tema de mujeres indígenas, se caracteriza como grupos vulnerables o bien se incorporan en esta frase tan repetida, niños, jóvenes y mujeres indígenas. Las mujeres indígenas no somos grupo vulnerable, ni somos minorías. Las mujeres indígenas somos sujetos de derecho, incluyendo derechos económicos y políticos y agentes económicas, agentes reproductoras de vida, de cultura, de identidades, de conocimientos y de memoria histórica. En este contexto, si analizamos los obstáculos estructurales para el desarrollo desde la propia perspectiva de las mujeres indígenas, es necesario hacer un llamado de atención sobre el tema de la violencia. Para lograr el desarrollo económico y social, es necesario que las mujeres indígenas tengamos acceso a una vida libre de violencia, con autonomía, desarrollando el empoderamiento económico sin dividir lo público y lo privado, identificando los tipos de violencia y, sobre todo, partiendo de nuestra visión, de nuestras lógicas, de nuestra cultura, de nuestros saberes, experiencias y nuestras propuestas. Frente a esta situación, el Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas recomienda a los estados, a los organismos financieros de cooperación multi y bilaterales, al UNFPA, ONU Mujeres y otras agencias de Naciones Unidas. Primero, reconocer a las mujeres indígenas como portadoras de recursos y capacidades, como agentes activas de la economía y como sujetos de derechos económicos y políticos. Segundo, asignar recursos financieros y diseñar mecanismos y procesos culturalmente pertinentes para fortalecer las organizaciones y redes de mujeres indígenas, construyendo liderazgos, capacidades e impulsando empoderamiento económico como una estrategia para acceder a una vida libre de violencia con libertad y autonomía. Tercero, promover y apoyar la creación y consolidación de un observatorio de mujeres indígenas como la violencia liderado por las propias mujeres indígenas, con el objetivo de monitorear, sistematizar y documentar información sobre manifestaciones de violencias contra mujeres indígenas, aportando mayor visibilidad al tema e incidiendo en los espacios de toma de decisión. Cuarto, desarrollar un mecanismo de articulación entre los organismos institucionales y los mecanismos comunitarios para redoblar la asignación de recursos materiales, financieros y humanos, con el fin de erradicar las diferentes manifestaciones de violencia y, en particular, la mortalidad materna entre las mujeres indígenas. Quinto, valorar y retribuir el trabajo de las mujeres indígenas que se ocupan de la prevención de la violencia, la reparación emocional y el cuidado de la salud física y mental de las mujeres y niños que han sufrido violencia. Para lograrlo se requiere de políticas y programas apropiados recomendados por la CEDAW y por la Convención de Belén do Pará. Sexto, documentar las experiencias y las buenas prácticas que se han desarrollado en diversos espacios, experiencias valiosas, muchas de estas que han surgido de los espacios comunitarios. Séptimo, promover la ciudadanía de las mujeres indígenas en el ámbito del ejercicio del poder a fin de lograr representación política y paritaria en los espacios de decisión a todo nivel en nuestros países. Esto permitiría el desarrollo de nuestros pueblos y de las mujeres indígenas. Para concluir, resaltamos el compromiso del Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas y nuestro apoyo para el cumplimiento de las recomendaciones adoptadas por el Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas en la lucha por el pleno ejercicio de los derechos de las mujeres indígenas. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Muchas gracias, doña Otilia. I thank doña Otilia for her statement. Before we continue with the list of speakers, I would like to inform participants that you can also follow the proceedings of this meeting in the conference room 2, which is the overflow room. So if someone comes in and doesn't have space, there is an overflow room. I would like to give the floor to Mr. Rodney Cook from IFAD.
Madam Chair, thank you for giving me the floor. On behalf of IFAD, let me first congratulate you, Mirna, for your nomination as chair of the Permanent Forum, and congratulate all the members for their nomination. Madam Chair, last week I was involved with the IFAD president and staff in presenting our new strategic framework to our executive board of member states. The goal of this framework is to enable poor rural people to improve their food security, raise their incomes, and strengthen their resilience. This new framework, which runs for the next 5 years, focuses on championing the empowerment of poor rural people and indicates specifically the important role of indigenous peoples. The framework underscores that the lack of effective political representation of indigenous peoples often leads to policies that do not respond to their needs. Thus, IFAD will expand its policy engagement with its developing member states by working with governments, farmers' organizations, indigenous peoples' organizations, and other partners to develop comprehensive rural development policies for poverty reduction. A strong focus of the new strategic framework of IFAD is empowerment. In the next 5 years, IFAD will strive to increase the decision-making and organizational capacity of rural people living in poverty, especially women, indigenous peoples, and youth. We will do this by enabling them to strengthen and build their individual and collective assets, their knowledge and skills, and capacity to innovate in rural development. Emphasis will be given to increased communication and advocacy, and IFAD will work to amplify the voices of poor rural people, particularly the voices of indigenous peoples. Madam Chair, last year at our 9th session of the forum, we announced IFAD's policy on engagement with indigenous people. This policy builds on cultural heritage and identity of indigenous peoples and approaches these qualities as an asset and as a source of untapped economic potential. The policy, you may recall, contains 9 principles for enhancing our development effectiveness, including the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. This policy is based upon our experience on the ground and was developed in extensive consultation with leaders of indigenous peoples, some of whom are here today in this room. We also informed you that in order to translate that policy into action, we were planning to establish an Indigenous Peoples Forum at IFAD, and this was also recommended by the Permanent Forum last year. We're happy to announce that in February of this year, IFAD established its Indigenous Peoples Forum. The president of the fund officially announced it to our member states the following day during his opening speech to our governing council. Ladies and gentlemen, our governing council is the meeting of our 160 member states, which meets once a year in IFAD. The objectives of this forum are the following 3. First, to monitor and evaluate the implementation of IFAD's policy. Secondly, to build and strengthen partnerships between IFAD and indigenous peoples in order to address poverty and sustainable development. And thirdly, to promote the participation of indigenous peoples' organizations in IFAD activities at country, regional, and international levels. In other words, in all stages of our program cycle. During lunchtime today in this room, we held a side event to communicate this process, which will lead to our first global forum in February 2013 in conjunction with that year's Governing Council of IFAD. On behalf of my colleagues, I wish to thank all of you who offered support and advice on establishing this forum at IFAD. Another instrument to promote implementation of this policy is a dedicated fund the Indigenous Peoples Assistance Facility. This is a demand-driven fund that finances Indigenous peoples' small projects based on their needs, priorities, and identity. IFAD is strengthening this facility by, first of all, increasing its financial resources, and secondly, by decentralizing its management to Indigenous peoples' regional organizations. I'm pleased to inform you that last week, again at our executive board, IFAD approved a grant of $1.5 million to finance that co-finance that facility. We plan to issue the next call for proposals around June of this year. We're also working on linking the facility's small projects and grassroots organizations with our much larger regular program. In 2010 alone, IFAD provided around $106 million in regular loans and grants, which involved the development of Indigenous peoples. Other steps that we've taken to implement that policy last year are fourfold. First of all, we updated our operational guidelines for country programs to comply with that policy. Second, we improved our quality enhancement process to be consistent with that policy. And thirdly, in close cooperation with the ASIA Indigenous Peoples Act, we developed a series of country technical notes to provide ready access to information on Indigenous peoples' issues. Fourthly, in cooperation with the Christensen Fund, we developed a fellowship agreement with Rome University to host two Indigenous students at IFAD for 1 year. Madam Chair, detailed information of that work is contained in the report that IFAD submitted to this session of the forum. In our continued effort to actively listen to Indigenous peoples, we're able to achieve many positive results at IFAD. We are aware that this is only possible thanks to the constructive dialogue with Indigenous leaders and the forum that you are chairing. While we're proud of progress achieved, we are also well aware that much more needs to be done, and we plan to concentrate our efforts in four main areas. First, to promote the active participation of Indigenous peoples' organization in the design of IFAD's country strategic opportunities programs and our program cycle. Second, to improve the design, monitoring, and evaluation of IFAD-funded projects by using specific indicators for the well-being of Indigenous peoples. Thirdly, to support the empowerment of Indigenous peoples by promoting effective and sustainable Indigenous peoples' organizations that can engage as partners and co-managers in development initiatives. Finally, to improve IFAD's advocacy role in disseminating best practices of development approaches with Indigenous peoples. Madam Chair, we're convinced that not only by working together can we improve our work on the ground and build partnerships with Indigenous peoples, but finally, and before closing, I would like to congratulate Chandra Roy Henriksen for her appointment as Chief of the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum. We wish her all the best. And I would also like to thank my colleague Antonella Cordoni for her unstinting efforts on behalf of Indigenous peoples in the development of IFAD's programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rodney Cook, for your statement. I would call on Mr. Juan Pablo de la Iglesia, Permanent Representative of Spain. Take the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Quiero comenzar felicitándole, así como al resto de los nuevos miembros, por su elección para formar parte del foro durante el periodo 2011-2013. Las cuestiones indígenas están en la agenda multilateral gracias a los pueblos indígenas, que reclamaron durante décadas un espacio propio en esta organización. Al saludar a los representantes indígenas reunidos hoy aquí, mi delegación quiere rendir homenaje a su liderazgo. Gracias a ellos, Naciones Unidas cuenta desde 2002 con este foro permanente en el que ellos son los actores principales. Señora presidenta, año tras año, este foro dirige una serie de recomendaciones a los Estados, al sistema de Naciones Unidas, a las organizaciones regionales, a las empresas transnacionales y a la sociedad civil. España ha respondido al cuestionario acerca del cumplimiento de dichas recomendaciones. El informe de España incluye una descripción detallada de las acciones y programas concretos que mi país lleva a cabo en relación con el respeto y la promoción de los derechos y del desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas, señaladamente en la región de América Latina y el Caribe. El informe se encuentra a disposición de todas las delegaciones, por lo que no insistiré en su contenido. En cambio, sí quisiera referirme a los principios y el marco general que informan la actuación de España hacia los pueblos indígenas. La política de cooperación de España se basa en el reconocimiento del derecho que tienen estos a definir y poner en práctica sus propios modelos de desarrollo. Se articula a través de la Estrategia de la Cooperación Española con los Pueblos Indígenas, aprobada en el 2007, en la que se reconoce que existe una estrecha vinculación entre la identidad, la cultura y la cosmovisión de los pueblos indígenas y el control de sus tierras y territorios, que constituyen la base simbólica y material de su existencia como entidades que son diferenciadas social, política y culturalmente. Este documento es el resultado de un largo proceso participativo en el que han tomado parte, sobre todo, organizaciones indígenas, cuyas opiniones, reivindicaciones y puntos de vista han informado el contenido de toda la estrategia. Estrategia que incorpora también los principios contenidos en los instrumentos internacionales suscritos por España, que contienen referencias a las políticas de cooperación con los pueblos indígenas, además de, por supuesto, los principios de los convenios generales en materia de derechos humanos. Entre ellos, el convenio 169 de la OIT sobre pueblos indígenas y tribales en países independientes, el convenio sobre diversidad biológica y, sobre todo, la Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas adoptada por la Asamblea General en 2007 tras un largo proceso que mi país apoyó de manera activa y comprometida. Señora presidenta, en este contexto querría referirme brevemente a cómo España trata de incorporar en sus acciones las recomendaciones del foro respecto a los tres ámbitos identificados en la agenda. En el ámbito del desarrollo, un derecho inalienable, el foro nos ha recordado a menudo la necesidad de que las actuaciones de los gobiernos y de las organizaciones y países donantes tengan presentes las preocupaciones específicas de los pueblos indígenas, garantizando al tiempo su progreso y su derecho a mantener sus particularidades y su vinculación con la tierra. Para España, los pueblos indígenas tienen derecho al autodesarrollo, entendido como la elaboración, aplicación y proyección de modelos de desarrollo definidos desde sus respectivas identidades. Así, las actuaciones de la cooperación española se enmarcan en un apoyo a las organizaciones, instituciones y autoridades tradicionales de los pueblos indígenas en los procesos internos de definición de estrategias y de modelos de desarrollo propios, promoviendo la participación efectiva tanto de los hombres como de las mujeres. Quiero mencionar en este contexto el Fondo para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas de América Latina y el Caribe, organismo internacional especializado en la promoción del autodesarrollo y el reconocimiento de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, del que España es activo miembro y cuya novena Asamblea General tuvo lugar en Madrid el pasado mes de septiembre. Respecto al medio ambiente, los pueblos indígenas tienen una vinculación especialmente estrecha con sus tierras y territorios y han sido capaces de desarrollar métodos eficaces para el cuidado de sus entornos. Además, sus medios de vida, de consumo reducido y su concepto de bienestar tienen un impacto enormemente positivo en la conservación del medio ambiente y de la biodiversidad. Y se da la paradoja de que, teniendo la huella ecológica más pequeña, sufren, sin embargo, en gran medida las consecuencias del cambio climático. El año pasado, los debates de este foro volvieron a señalar las tensiones existentes entre la cosmovisión de los pueblos indígenas, para quienes el ser humano es inseparable de la naturaleza, y la visión más antropocéntrica del progreso que impera en la comunidad internacional y que en no pocos casos se ha impuesto a costa de la deforestación, la contaminación, de las aguas y del aire. Un mayor equilibrio entre estas dos concepciones pasa forzosamente por el incremento de la participación en la formulación de leyes y políticas relacionadas con el cambio climático. En el informe de España al foro figuran también ejemplos de algunas acciones financiadas por mi país con este objetivo. Finalmente, en cuanto al consentimiento previo, libre e informado, la situación de vulnerabilidad de muchos pueblos indígenas ha estado ligada a la falta de mecanismos efectivos para su participación en la toma de decisiones incluso sobre cuestiones que les afectan. La Estrategia de la Cooperación Española para los Pueblos Indígenas incluye entre sus principios básicos el derecho al consentimiento previo, libre e informado, y por ello todas las acciones financiadas por la Agencia Española de Cooperación Internacional para el Desarrollo se realizan en consulta y participación de los pueblos indígenas de acuerdo con lo dispuesto en el Convenio 169 de la OIT. España, además, presta apoyo a algunos procesos nacionales tendentes a promover la participación indígena en la toma de decisiones, en el convencimiento de que esa participación no solo es justa, sino que además redunda en beneficio de toda la sociedad. Señora presidenta, concluyo deseándole éxito en la conducción de los trabajos de este foro, que mi delegación seguirá, como en años anteriores, con el máximo interés. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Mr. de la Iglesia. I call now on Gazali Orella from the Global Caucus to make your statement.
Tabea, Madam Chairperson, the Global Caucus of Indigenous Peoples and our communities throughout the globe are calling for action to respond to the critical issues that continue to be experienced by our peoples. The UN Declaration is a consensus document, and now is the time to implement it and seize the injustices that have persisted in our territories. We have met and recommend the following issues and concerns. On economic and social development, capacities to build an economic social base which is self-designed and decolonized, and access to natural resources is essential to our well-being, to recognize and create solutions of environmental contamination. This captures the worldview of Indigenous peoples' doctrine of living well. On human and Indigenous rights and implementation of the Declaration, Indigenous peoples are equal to all other peoples. Indigenous rights must be recognized by governments and states, and education and awareness must be made available to Indigenous peoples regarding rights under the Declaration. Also, mechanisms are needed to ensure Indigenous peoples are meaningfully included in decision-making processes, and we urge states to ratify laws implementing the Declaration. We are concerned that current UN processes addressing the environment and impacts of unsustainable development are failing to recognize the right to participate in decision-making and free, prior, and informed consent. Free, prior, and informed consent, adverse to social and environmental impacts on Indigenous peoples occur when states and corporations fail to engage Indigenous peoples. The Indigenous peoples declare free, prior, and informed consent is not negotiable and must be implemented as adopted in Articles 19, 26, and 32 of the Declaration. The participation and consultation of Indigenous peoples is absolutely necessary in all development processes. Environment. We Indigenous peoples have an intrinsic relationship with our lands and territories. Today, we are increasingly witnessing the crime of terricide, defined as the willful and premeditated crime against humanity and the rights of Mother Earth that results in the destruction of the capacity of Earth to be a mother to the future generations. We endorsed the 2010 World People's Conference on Climate Change and Rights of Mother Earth, adoption of the People's Agreement of Cochabamba. We are deeply concerned about RED, proposed policies and initiatives to utilize the carbon market as a part of the Green Economy Initiative and compel us to safeguard the rights of women. The Permanent Forum has continually recommended from the second to ninth session a range of environmental issues, and the participation of and policies on Indigenous peoples still remain unresolved. The Global Caucus therefore reiterates the recommendation to organize an expert group meeting on Indigenous women, reproductive health, and environmental toxins, and requests that this meeting be held in 2012 before the 11th session. On water, water is a human right and not a commodity. We request a report on actions taken concerning water issues from previous recommendations. Indigenous women are the caretakers of the water, and consulting with and including Indigenous women in water protection processes is of great importance. Indigenous women's rights and health status have remained a critical matter of concern. Equal access to judicial processes is needed to enforce maternal rights of Indigenous women. A strategic plan must be developed to protect mothers and infants from environmental harm and overall implementation of CEDAW. and unrecognized and unrepresented indigenous peoples, we recommend that administrative processes must include a viable means to incorporate the indigenous participation, use of traditional indigenous forms of government, and individual indigenous recognition. On borders, human rights are violated when indigenous peoples are prevented from interaction with other indigenous nations, including the use of militarization on borders. The forced displacements are survival acts that are criminalized. We, the Global Indigenous Caucus, endorse the recommendations of the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus that the legal foundation upon all life remains institutionalized in law and policies adversely impacting life. The doctrine of discovery today is in direct violation of the entirety of the Declaration. Therefore, we respectfully request the expert group meeting address the theme for 2012 of the doctrine of discovery in all seriousness and purpose and practical effects. On future work of the Permanent Forum, including issues of the Economic and Social Council and emerging issues, given the decision by the 9th session of this forum to make the doctrine of discovery the theme of the 11th session of the Permanent Forum, the Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus expresses its unqualified support for the convening of an expert group meeting on the doctrine of discovery. We recommend an international expert group meeting be convened in January 2012, which will expand upon and discuss the findings and implications of the preliminary study of the impact of the international legal construct known as the doctrine of discovery. That also identifies the past and continuing impact of the framework of dominance on indigenous nations and indigenous peoples. Lawa mena holala, hormate. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you for your statement. I now call on Luz Angela Melo from the United Nations Population Fund.
Gracias, señora presidenta. En nombre del UNFPA, Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas, queremos dar la bienvenida a los nuevos miembros del foro y muy especialmente a usted, señora presidenta, porque usted conoce el trabajo de mi agencia y entiende la importancia de garantizar la salud sexual y reproductiva de las mujeres indígenas para el ejercicio de sus derechos. También queremos dar la bienvenida a la señora Chandra Roy, nueva jefa del secretariado. A todos ustedes les deseamos muchos éxitos. Madam Chair, UNFPA is continuing its efforts to mainstream indigenous issues through its strategies and programs. We are pleased to announce that following an extensive participatory process that included former and current members of the UN Permanent Forum, indigenous leaders, and civil society organizations, among others, UNFPA elaborated and finished its corporate strategy on the indigenous issues. This strategy provides guidance for our country offices in more than 100 countries in the world on how to work to promote the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and how to support governments and indigenous organizations to advance sexual and reproductive health of indigenous peoples, including addressing the high rates of maternal mortality among indigenous women, how to work on gender equality, and how to collect data and produce evidence-based and research for advocates and policymakers. We hope that this strategy will be officially approved on the 25th of May, and you will be able to add UNFPA to the list of agencies that have specific policies on indigenous peoples. This year, we have included in our report to the Permanent Forum information on some of our programs which support indigenous peoples in around 19 countries from Latin America and the Caribbean, Asia Pacific, and Africa. We are happy to report that our office in Congo-Brazzaville has supported the government in its efforts to adopt a law to protect indigenous peoples. We would like to invite you to a site event that will take place on the 18th of May at 1:15 in the Brinkman Hotel with the presence of His Excellency, the Minister of Communications and Government Spokesperson of Congo and the UNFPA Deputy Executive Director. It is also our pleasure to inform you that in line with the recommendations of the forum, UNFPA has continued to intensify its efforts to promote and mainstream a culturally sensitive approach to its programs at the global, regional, and national level. This approach, which furthers human rights principles through the understanding and respect of different traditions, cultural backgrounds, religious and ethical values, is central for UNFPA's work in dealing with indigenous issues. Of course, lots of things remain to be done. In the area of health, UNFPA is aware that there are aspects which are particularly relevant to indigenous peoples. Providing pertinent and effective health services depends on the ability of medical and social services to accommodate cultural understandings, perceptions, and practices. As you know, indigenous peoples, and particularly indigenous women, have the worst social demographic indicators and the largest inequalities in terms of access to social services in many parts of the world. Indicators of poverty, as well as maternal and infant mortality, are systematically higher amid indigenous peoples than non-indigenous populations. Among indigenous peoples, women face triple discrimination linked to gender, ethnic, and socioeconomic factors. In Latin America, this situation has started to change, and empowered indigenous women leaders, organizations, and networks are playing an influential role. Today, in many countries in the region, empowered indigenous women leaders have organized and are networking using their own life experiences as part of their advocacy efforts in order to demand the right to health. In some countries of the region, more effective social and health policies are starting to address the conditions of poverty and discrimination that indigenous women face, although they must still be scaled up. Policies that support indigenous women's reproductive rights have the goal of making reproductive health services more accessible, available financially and geographically, and also culturally acceptable. We hope that other regions will follow. Governmental health systems are beginning to understand and engage indigenous people's notions of health and illness and the traditional medicinal knowledge that links their biological, spiritual, and emotional lives. Nevertheless, it will require concerted negotiations to find a true common understanding between Western health principles and practices and the traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples in order to carry out the changes that will definitively enhance indigenous women's access and use of reproductive health services, health systems need to recognize indigenous people's rights, including the right to cultural continuity, health, and particularly to life. Madam Chair, we sincerely believe that the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues provides a great opportunity to discuss how UNFPA can further contribute to improving their lives and promoting and protecting the human rights of indigenous peoples throughout the world. We look forward to continuing to build on the recommendations that will be made by this forum. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I thank the representative of UMSA. I now call on Ms. Kat Halbert, Deputy Secretary, Department of Families, Housing, Community Services, and Indigenous Affairs of Australia. You have the floor.
The Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and welcomes this opportunity to update the forum on developments in Indigenous policy. We also congratulate you on your new role and welcome the new members of the Permanent Forum and acknowledge the talent and experience they bring. In particular, we are very proud of the achievements of Australia's Professor Megan Davis. We know that she will serve the forum with distinction. Last year, the theme of the forum was Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity. In its recommendations on the theme, the Permanent Forum advocated that states provide Indigenous peoples with political, institutional, and financial support to consolidate their own development models and concepts and practices of living well. The Australian Government is committed to stronger engagement with Indigenous communities, in line with our support for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The National Congress of Australia's First Peoples, which is being supported by the Government, will provide a central mechanism with which governments, the corporate and community sectors can engage and partner on reform initiatives. It will also be an informed and strong national voice for the goals, aspirations and values of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. The establishment phase of the National Congress took place over 2010 and operations commenced in January 2011. I would like to congratulate Jody Brown and Les Meltzer, who will be well known to many of you, on their election as co-chairs of the National Executive. The inaugural gathering of delegates will be held in June 2011, where the election of the part-time members of the National Executive will take place. The Permanent Forum's ninth session report recommends the support for the full and effective participation of Indigenous women in decision-making spheres. The National Congress exemplifies this goal. It has male and female co-chairs and it guarantees gender balance for delegates and office holders. Also indicative of the Australian Government's support for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is the commitment to pursuing recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders in the Constitution. This is another important step towards building a nation based on strong relations and mutual respect. In December 2010, the government appointed an expert panel to lead a wide-ranging national public consultation and engagement program throughout 2011 to hear the Australian people's views on how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples might be recognised in the Constitution. We are pleased to note that forum member Professor Megan Davis is also a member of that expert panel, as are the co-chairs of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. The panel will report to the government by December 2011 on possible options for constitutional change and the level of support they are likely to receive from the Australian public. Delegates will recall that Australia announced its support for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in 2009 as a further step after the national apology to the Stolen Generations in a reformed approach to engagement with Indigenous peoples. It is integral to their enjoyment of the full range of human rights that Indigenous peoples can have the same opportunities and life outcomes as Australians generally. Australia is committed to closing the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. The Australian government recognises that this requires a genuine national collaboration involving all levels of government in partnership with Indigenous Australians, the corporate sector and non-profit organisations. The government's commitment to closing the gap is driven by three important imperatives: to overcome decades of underinvestment in services and infrastructure, to encourage and support personal responsibility as the foundation for healthy, functional families and communities, and to build new understanding and respect between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. We have spoken here before about closing the gap, and I would like to provide the forum with an update on progress. The government has forged significant reforms through the National Indigenous Reform Agreement and a range of national partnership agreements on remote housing, early childhood, health, remote service delivery and economic participation. In February 2011, the Prime Minister's annual Closing the Gap report was tabled in Parliament. The report sets out the progress being made towards reaching the 2008 Closing the Gap targets, which are designed to address Indigenous disadvantage in key areas. One of these targets is to halve the gap in mortality rates for Indigenous children under five within a decade, that is, by 2018. Indigenous children are twice as likely to die before their fifth birthday as non-Indigenous children. This gap has been closing in recent years, and improvements will continue with the expansion of preventive health care and child and maternal health services. The target to provide access to early childhood education for all Indigenous four-year-olds in remote communities within 5 years, that is by 2013, is on track to be achieved through a combination of infrastructure provision and support services. The Australian government has identified seven key building blocks addressing specific areas of Indigenous disadvantage, which are vital to closing the gap. One of these building blocks is economic participation, and the Australian government has developed a draft Indigenous economic development strategy, which will set the key priorities to support Indigenous economic development. Extensive consultation on this draft strategy was undertaken between May and December 2010. with over 110 written submissions and 20 public workshops held across Australia. The strategy is expected to be finalised this year. One area where governments, Indigenous peoples and industry have worked together to create those economic opportunities is seen in the Torres Strait region in Australia's far north. The Torres Strait Islanders have a long history and tradition of fishing for subsistence and ceremony. These traditional skills are now being applied to the commercial world, with islanders assuming responsibility for much of the region's successful fishing industry. We would like to invite you to come to our side event on Friday to hear more about the culture of this fascinating part of Australia. Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. The Permanent Forum is invaluable for the range of ideas and information that is exchanged, and we are looking forward to an informative and productive fortnight. Thank you.
Thank you. I thank the representative of Australia. I would like to remind you that the private conversations should be out of the room because we need to listen to the presentations in order to make good recommendations. And remember that we have the conference room 2, which is the overflow room, just in case you don't have space in this room. Thank you for your cooperation. I would call now and give the floor to Mr. Akaluk Ling from the Arctic Caucus.
Person of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, this statement is made on behalf of the Arctic Caucus. We welcome the opening of the 10th Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and congratulate you, Madam Chair, for your appointment as chair of this important forum. The Arctic Caucus further wishes to thank Mr. Lars Anders Bær for his good work for the last 3 years and congratulate Dr. Daly Storo and the other members of the forum on their appointment as forum members. We look forward to work with you the next 3 years and will assist you in any way we can improve in order to improve the working methods and effectiveness of the Permanent Forum. As many of you know, the Arctic is in these years the center of attention due to the global climate change and the race to extract the natural resources in our territories. Locally, we see and feel the chances on a daily basis, and we, as Indigenous Peoples Organization in the Arctic, worry about the impacts of climate change. As the Arctic is melting, we see an increase in activities such as oil and gas exploration, mining, other industrial development, and shipping in the Arctic. Last week, the Intergovernmental Organization Arctic Council held its seventh ministerial meeting in Nuuk, Greenland. The Arctic Council consists of 8 member Arctic states and is unique in its structure as 6 Indigenous Peoples Organizations from the Arctic, including the Sami Council and the Inuit Circumpolar Council, are permanent participants. We actually participate in the ministerial meetings and the working groups and senior Arctic official meetings. At its seventh ministerial meeting, the Arctic Council for the first time developed a legally binding agreement as the foreign ministers of the United States, Canada, Russia, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland agreed on Arctic search and rescue agreement. The agreement is stated in the ministerial meeting result. The Nuuk Declaration signed on May 12, just a few days ago. The declaration also calls for a strengthening of the Arctic Council and establishes a standing secretariat of the Arctic Council. We welcome this decision and the placement of the secretariat in the Arctic region. We see that as a recognition of the fact that the Arctic should be governed by the people in the Arctic. As more legally binding instruments are negotiated under the auspices of the Arctic Council, and as the Council expands from being mainly a research institution into the principal decision-making body of the Arctic region, we, as permanent participants also foresee that we are allowed to be part of such negotiations on equal footing with the states. We also want to bring your attention to the Circumpolar Inuit Declaration on Resource Development Principles in Inuit Nunat, which was presented in Nuuk on May 11th. The declaration was developed in an Inuit Leaders Summit on Resource Development held in Ottawa, Canada, February this year. In our declaration, we, inter alia, call for a responsible development of the Arctic, prioritization of Inuit involvement in decision-making, greater Inuit economic, social, and cultural self-sufficiency, and self-determination. We will welcome our Indigenous colleagues to join us at the presentation of the declaration at a site event Wednesday this week. In the Sami part of the Arctic, we welcome the establishment of the World Heritage Site at Laponia. This implies that an area of 9,400 square kilometers will now be managed by a board where majority come from the Sami reindeer herding communities in the area. Madam Chair, the Arctic Caucus recommends the Permanent Forum to study the Indigenous participatory mechanism in the Arctic Council, the Circumpolar Inuit Declaration on Resource Development Principles, and the Laponia Management System as examples of good practice. I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Akaluk. I would now call on John Fernandez Larrinoa from Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO.
Gracias, señora presidente, por el uso de la palabra y felicidades por su nombramiento y el resto de los compañeros en el día de hoy. Les deseamos lo mejor para este nuevo periodo. Excellencies and representatives, eminent guests, honorable members of the Permanent Forum, ladies and gentlemen, FAO is pleased to announce the adoption of its policy of indigenous and tribal peoples. Adopted at the end of 2010, this policy of indigenous and tribal people is the culmination of a process started 5 years ago, a process of negotiation and consultation with individuals, experts, indigenous peoples, and organizations. FAO would like to take this very opportunity to thank each and every person that has contributed to the process. Without your invaluable suggestions, the policy will not be a reality today. But what does the adoption of the policy mean for FAO? The Indigenous and Tribal Peoples Policy is FAO's response to the calls of Indigenous peoples, the response to recommendations made by the Permanent Forum to the different UN agencies, the response to FAO's commitment under its strategic framework, which reads, "The organization will work to ensure that the capacity of FAO staff and institutions in member countries to implement FAO's Indigenous Peoples Policy is enhanced." However, the policy is not the beginning of FAO's work with indigenous and tribal peoples. FAO has had a long-standing collaboration with some indigenous organizations and members of the Permanent Forum. The policy brings instead the technical expertise of FAO in agriculture, forestry, fisheries, livestock, natural resources, and food security closer to the indigenous peoples by recognizing their needs and acknowledging their rights and knowledge. Indeed, it is not only FAO's policy, but the indigenous peoples as well. Indigenous peoples organized themselves into a caucus during the process of negotiations, a caucus that articulated different indigenous people voices and opinion, a caucus that will lead to a more robust implementation of activities from now on. From the policy, three main areas of work are evolving. Area number one, norm setting and policy dialogue to maximize FAO's potential as a neutral forum to discuss instruments and treaties that set the standards on food security. Like, for example, the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources, ensuring the sustainable use of plant genetic resources and the equitable sharing of the benefits from their use. Area number two, field program activities, like in Central America through projects like creativity and cultural identity for local development, where FAO supports the small business of rural indigenous communities for them to sell their cultural products in the tourism market. Area number three, advocacy and knowledge generation, with FAO serving as a knowledge organization built upon the expertise of FAO's agronomists, foresters, fisheries, nutritionists, livestock experts, and social scientists, amongst others. Information creates knowledge, and knowledge is key to awareness, which influences policy and decision-making, like, for example, in the Initiative of Indigenous Communication for Development, which has set up participatory communication platforms like Plataforma Indígena in Latin America. It is through these three areas that FAO's policy of indigenous and tribal people will unfold in the following years. FAO is confident that with this policy in place, it will be able to build on the experience of fruitful collaborations with indigenous peoples to reduce hunger, poverty, and inequality in the world. The work of FAO to achieve food security for all cannot leave out any indigenous women, children, or men. Gracias por su atención. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. I will now call on Mrs. Lida Beatriz, President of National Institute for Indigenous Issues of Paraguay.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Felicidades por su nombramiento como miembro del foro permanente. Señores representantes, hermanos y hermanas de pueblos y organizaciones indígenas, señoras y señores, constituye un honor para el gobierno y el pueblo del Paraguay, en coincidencia con el aniversario el pasado fin de semana de los actos conmemorativos por el bicentenario de la independencia nacional, participar en este importante foro en el que tendremos a bien exponer todos los esfuerzos que se han llevado a cabo a fin de cumplir con todas las recomendaciones de la novena reunión del foro permanente para las cuestiones indígenas. Asimismo, se han tomado en cuenta las recomendaciones de reuniones anteriores, siempre con el mismo interés que responde a la política actual del Estado paraguayo en los siguientes aspectos. Respecto a la titulación de tierras reclamadas, se ha respondido tomando como punto de partida la solicitud de las comunidades indígenas desde la base de su territorio ancestral como compromiso del gobierno en la buena práctica para la restitución territorial. En el año 2010, el Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena otorgó títulos de propiedad comunitaria en un total de 155.218 hectáreas que beneficiaron a 17 comunidades indígenas. Asimismo, se encuentra en etapa final el proceso de adquisición de tierra para la comunidad Enset de Quilemagatecma de 8.548 hectáreas, caso que se halla bajo la observación de la Comisión Interamericana de Derechos Humanos. Una señal clara respecto al interés del Estado sobre la restitución de las tierras indígenas constituye el hecho de que el presupuesto general de gastos de la Nación ha triplicado el presupuesto de rutina para adquisición de tierras, elevándolo de $4 millones a $22 millones de la misma moneda. El Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena mantiene un expediente jurídico administrativo sobre la tramitación de tierras de la comunidad Ayoreo, correspondiente a la reivindicación de unas 550.000 hectáreas, parte de las tierras de posesión tradicional y actual de los ayoreos. Otra de las instituciones del Poder Ejecutivo son coadyuvantes en este proceso en trámites impulsados por el Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena. Se mantiene un interés, un compromiso en los derechos de los pueblos en aislamiento voluntario con la adopción de políticas públicas conforme a las directrices del Alto Comisionado para los Derechos Humanos de las Naciones Unidas. A través de la cooperación del PNUD, se encuentra en estudio la creación de una unidad sobre pueblos aislados en la estructura del Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena, con el propósito de un tratamiento especial y la elaboración de un protocolo de emergencia. En tal sentido, el gobierno del Paraguay y el gobierno de Bolivia se hallan en proceso de negociación sobre un memorándum de entendimiento entre el gobierno del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia y el gobierno de la República del Paraguay sobre pueblo ayoreo y sus grupos sociales en condición de aislamiento. En referencia a los casos con sentencia de la Corte Interamericana de Derechos Humanos, cumplo en informar que continúan las tramitaciones y negociaciones con los propietarios de las tierras, considerando la disponibilidad actual de los recursos financieros del Estado. La CICSI, Comisión Interinstitucional conformada a ese efecto, se encuentra abocada a la búsqueda de soluciones a esta situación. En el caso de la comunidad Yaqueaxa, fue frustrada la adquisición de una finca perteneciente a la empresa Pastoril S.A. debido al desistimiento de la comunidad, luego de haberla aceptado previamente. Y regresando nuevamente al reclamo anterior, aunque reduciendo su pretensión de 15.700 hectáreas a 8.000 hectáreas. En el caso de la comunidad Samocase, se ha superado las dificultades en cuanto a la identificación y denominación de la comunidad, por lo cual se avanza en el proceso de titulación de tierras. Al mismo tiempo, desde la Secretaría de Emergencia Nacional, se han realizado provisiones de alimentos y chapas, colchones, frazadas y capas plásticas a la familia de las comunidades Samocase, Quelemagatema, Saboyamaxa, Yaqueaxa y Ingacamarangatú. La Política Nacional de Salud Indígena fue aprobada en marzo del 2008 y convalidada en el año 2009, y sus principios rectores y valores son la salud como derecho humano fundamental, una gestión compartida que implica participación y cogestión entre pueblos indígenas y el Estado paraguayo, atención con universalidad, integralidad, equidad e interculturalidad. Con respecto al combate al VIH, SIDA y otras enfermedades, el Sistema Nacional de Salud Único, Universal, Integral, Incluyente y Solidario, con equidad y participación social, planteado como objetivo de la política de salud, orienta acciones y actividades de los programas sobre prevención y control de la tuberculosis y del VIH-SIDA a través de redes de servicios de salud. En referencia a la recomendación de este foro, es importante mencionar que el Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena y otras instituciones competentes en cuestiones indígenas ha puesto en ejecución desde el año 2010 el proyecto de innovación estructural del Poder Ejecutivo. En el marco de este proyecto y con amplia participación de las organizaciones y articulaciones de los pueblos indígenas, se elaboró una propuesta nacional que contempla la creación de un Ministerio de Pueblos Indígenas, con lo cual expresaron su acuerdo los representantes indígenas del Paraguay. Dicha propuesta ha sido presentada a la sociedad paraguaya por parte del presidente de la República, don Fernando Lugo. Otra preocupación constante del Estado paraguayo constituye la situación de vulnerabilidad en que se encuentra la infancia indígena expuesta a la explotación. En ese punto, se ha aprobado la Estrategia Nacional de Erradicación de Trabajo Infantil y Protección de los y las Adolescentes. En relación al trabajo forzoso de adultos indígenas y otras formas de servidumbre, el Ministerio de Justicia y Trabajo ha creado el Programa Nacional de Trabajo Decente, que establece como prioridad mejorar el cumplimiento de los derechos fundamentales del trabajo y su efectiva aplicación mediante el trabajo coordinado entre las autoridades paraguayas y la OIT. Es importante señalar que el Servicio Nacional de Catastro ha completado el 100% el catastro alfanumérico de las propiedades rurales del país y la cartografía catastral urbana. Esto a fin de precautelar los inmuebles que se encuentran a nombre del INDI, Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena o de las comunidades indígenas. La participación de los pueblos indígenas se afianza día a día. Se ha realizado en el Paraguay en el mes de marzo el segundo encuentro de la Nación Guaraní con representantes de pueblos guaraníes de Brasil, Argentina, Paraguay y Bolivia. Respecto a la educación indígena, fue creada por ley la Dirección General de Educación Indígena, instancia de participación directa de los pueblos indígenas en la formación y en el seguimiento y control de todo el proceso educativo, a fin de incorporar un currículum apropiado, materiales en lengua materna y formación docente acompañados de un Consejo Nacional de Educación Indígena, donde están representados los 20 pueblos indígenas del Paraguay. La educación escolar indígena se imparte en lengua materna y en uno de los idiomas oficiales guaraní o castellano. En relación a la sostenibilidad del ambiente, desde la Secretaría del Ambiente se encuentra en proceso el Plan Estratégico 2010-2015 del Sistema Nacional de Áreas Silvestres Protegidas. En relación al agua y saneamiento, la propuesta Paraguay para Todos y Todas, Plan 2020, presenta el agua y saneamiento como objetivo nacional del eje estratégico número 1, que tiene por objetivo lograr el acceso a los servicios de agua y saneamiento en condiciones adecuadas de calidad, cantidad y sostenibilidad. Con respecto al bienestar de los adultos mayores indígenas, se promulgó la ley que establece la pensión alimentaria. La implementación de esta normativa permitirá que sean beneficiarios todos los paraguayos mayores de 65 años y más en situación de pobreza, incluidos los adultos mayores indígenas. Es importante mencionar, respecto al consentimiento libre, previo e informado, establecido en el Convenio 169 sobre pueblos indígenas y tribales en países independientes, que el Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena adoptó la resolución 2039 del año 2010, por la cual se establece la obligación de solicitar la intervención del Instituto del Indígena para todos los procesos de consulta en las comunidades indígenas. Por último, cumplo en informar, en el marco de la décima sesión del Foro Permanente que nos ocupa, que desde el año 2009 el Gabinete Social del Gobierno del Paraguay, conjuntamente con el Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena y el Programa de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo PNUD, trabajan coordinadamente en el proyecto de fortalecimiento de capacidades institucionales para la implementación de políticas públicas orientadas a los pueblos indígenas. Este proyecto se desarrolla con la Federación por la Autonomía de los Pueblos Indígenas, FAPI, y la Asociación de Comunidades Guaraníes. En breve se publicará un material didáctico sobre las buenas prácticas en los trabajos con los pueblos indígenas dirigidos a los servidores públicos bajo el título Orientaciones básicas para el funcionario público en los trabajos con los pueblos indígenas. Publicación de la Secretaría de la Función Pública con la participación del Instituto Paraguayo del Indígena y con la cooperación del Sistema de Naciones Unidas. Y sobre la base de todas las reivindicaciones de los pueblos indígenas, en estos días el Poder Ejecutivo emitió el Decreto 6583/11 a fin de facilitar la participación de las organizaciones indígenas en todos los procesos. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Distinguished delegates, we still have 11 speakers remaining on our list for this afternoon. I would kindly request speakers to limit your statements to 5 minutes so that we can listen to all speakers. Now I call on Jacqueline Bernadette Carino from the Asia Caucus. You have the floor.
Of the Asia Indigenous Peoples on Agenda Item 3 on Economic and Social Development, as discussed during the Asia Preparatory Meeting. We affirm and reiterate the recommendations made during previous sessions of the Permanent Forum on Social, Economic, and Cultural Rights. In particular, we wish to highlight those recommendations that we feel still need to be implemented most urgently. One, that Asian states enact laws in line with international human rights and indigenous people's rights standards, regulating the activities of investors and corporations and mitigating the negative impact of economic liberalization in indigenous people's territories. This is especially important now that extractive industries, especially mining, energy projects, mega dams, logging, biofuel plantations, and others by private investors, are causing rampant and irreparable damage to indigenous people's lands and traditional livelihoods. Further, the recommendations arising from the UN Expert Workshop in 2009 on indigenous people's rights, corporate accountability, and extractive industries be fully implemented. Number two, that Asian states take effective measures to halt land alienation in indigenous territories and ensure the implementation of free prior informed consent regarding development projects on indigenous territories. In many states, indigenous peoples experience land grabbing, land use conversion, loss of livelihood and forced displacement due to the impact of development projects by states and corporations on their lands. Further, we urge the governments of Asian states visited by the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples, such as the Philippines, to implement his recommendations. Three, that serious measures are taken to mitigate the impacts of climate change on indigenous communities, protect and nurture indigenous peoples' traditional natural resource management practices, and development strategies for disaster preparedness towards arriving at global solutions to climate change. Indigenous peoples in all Asian countries are in the front lines of the climate crisis, since many of us suffer from super typhoons, unprecedented flooding, landslides, and other calamities brought about by climate change, which aggravate the fragility of our ecosystems. Four, that Asian states give proportionate attention to recording and reducing the number of indigenous peoples in poverty in the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals. Measures should be taken to ensure that state efforts to reduce poverty should benefit indigenous peoples and especially indigenous women at least as much as the general population, and that indigenous peoples are not sacrificed or excluded in the process. Five, that international financial institutions and transnational corporations adopt and abide by at least the minimum human rights and environmental standards consistent with the UNDRIP and ILO Convention 169. Appropriate and accessible grievance mechanisms should be put into place to ensure full participation of indigenous peoples in decision-making processes. Another practice that should be corrected is the setting up of investment defense forces, such as soldiers protecting mining and logging concessions at the expense of indigenous tribes living around the area. That states and UN agencies support us in the revitalization and strengthening of indigenous people's cultural heritage. Quality education that incorporates indigenous knowledge and culture into education programs and curricula, including use of indigenous language as a medium of instruction, should be reinforced. And in line with the International Year on Forests, states and UN agencies should promote conditions for indigenous peoples to maintain forests in their traditional way, including recognizing traditional forest management practices and governance systems in all forest policies. The non-conversion of long-established forests for other uses should be ensured by giving priority to indigenous lands and forest protection over other forms of land use. And finally, that states and UN agencies support indigenous people's efforts to consolidate their own development models and concepts, strengthen their capacities, highlight their traditional knowledge, and freely practice their own self-determined development. Madam Chair, we pray for immediate attention and decisive action on the above-mentioned recommendations from previous sessions of the Permanent Forum. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Carini. Now I call on Ms. Leticia Sobel from United Nations Environment Program. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dear Madam Chair, members of the forum, dear secretariat, colleagues and friends, distinguished delegates, it is UNEP's honor to address the 10th session of the forum today, and we would like to congratulate the forum to its 10th anniversary wholeheartedly. We would also like to extend our warm welcome to the new forum members who have been taking office earlier this year, and to you, Madam Chair, and the new chief of the secretariat. UNEP is also very pleased of having Mr. Paul Kanyinke Sena, who is based in Kenya, as a new member of the forum. Mr. Sena is working on environmental issues, so we have benefited from frequent meetings and exchanges with him. As recommended by the Permanent Forum, UNEP has been working over the last years on the enhancement of indigenous peoples' engagement with UNEP, including developing relevant guidelines, which, once adopted, will assist UNEP staff to develop and implement projects and programs, taking into account indigenous peoples' issues and involving indigenous peoples as equal partners. Another important initiative and process within UNEP, which takes into account indigenous peoples' views, includes the development of the fifth Global Environment Outlook, the so-called GEO5, through which UNEP provides an important tool for countries' informed decision-making. GEO is based on a consultative participatory process. GEO5 will describe the state and trends of the environment using an indicator-based analysis. It will have an outlook section and provide policy options for action. It will be launched prior to Rio Plus 20 next year. UNEP also invited to this process indigenous peoples' representatives to participate in this consultation through experts who would participate as GEO5 authors, reviewers, or as members of the GEO5 Science and Policy Board or the high-level intergovernmental advisory panel. The list of selected experts is available on the GEO website. An external review of the first draft chapters of GEO5 is open next month, so please get in touch with UNEP if you are interested to review certain chapters. UNEP is intensively involved in the preparations for the RioPlus20 conference, which UNEP considers as a historic opportunity to take ambitious decisions that set a stage for transforming the paradigm of sustainable development and that could signal the political will to move to such transformation in light of the considerably greater understanding of the issues of sustainable development. At the fourth UN Conference on Least Developed Countries held earlier this month in Istanbul, UNEP, UNCTAD, and the UN Office of the High Representative of the Least Developed Countries, Landlocked Developing Countries, and Small Island Developing States launched a common report entitled Why a Green Economy Matters for the Least Developed Countries. The developed and emerging countries face the costs linked to retiring inefficient fossil fuel-based technologies. LDCs, where many indigenous people live, can avoid these hurdles by maintaining and expanding sustainable economic activities they are already utilizing. For example, low-carbon, labor-intensive agriculture and community-based forestry are sustainable practices that have existed for decades or even centuries in these countries, and they will be central elements in greening these sectors. I would like to take this opportunity to invite you, the participants of the forum today, to a side event on the green economy and indigenous peoples, which will be held tomorrow, though, Tuesday, 17th of May, at the UNEP's office. UNEP is inviting for an exchange of ideas with participants and indigenous peoples in particular to shape the dialogue around themes of interest in the green economy context. We hope to develop this constructive dialogue over the coming months, leading to the RioPlus20 conference in 2012, and beyond, in order to strengthen the engagement with all the major groups and indigenous peoples towards a fair transformation of certain green economy sectors, in particular such as the forest, fisheries, and agricultural sectors. I would also like to draw your attention to another side event supported by UNEP, which will be held on Wednesday, the 18th of May, and this event will focus on nomadic herders' adaptation to globalization, the case of indigenous reindeer husbandry, and will discuss impacts of land use changes on indigenous reindeer herders. Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity. UNEP wishes you a successful continuation of the forum, and we look forward to our discussions.
Thank you. Now I would like to call on Mrs. Maria Teresa Mesquita Pessoa from the Government of Brazil.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. At the outset, I want to congratulate you for your election and through you, the present, to present my respects to all the members of the forum. Brazil wants to reiterate its commitment to the work of the Indigenous Forum. The continuous participation of representatives from the National Foundation for Indigenous Peoples, FUNAI, and from other relevant official agencies is a demonstration of Brazil's respect for this forum as an important space where member states have an occasion to learn from the forum and from civil society, especially the indigenous organizations themselves, and also to share shortcomings, progresses, and best practices. I would also like to register the presence with us of Representative Dalva Figueiredo, a member of the Brazilian National Congress, who is representing our parliament in this session of the forum. Madam Chair, Brazil is proud to host the conference RioPlus20 in June 2012, where we hope to welcome you all for the celebration of the 20th anniversary of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development, whose principles remain fundamental. My delegation is convinced that indigenous peoples have the right to fully participate in the process of development with full respect for their identity. The Brazilian Constitution of 1988 affirms the right of indigenous peoples to learn in their own native languages and according to their own methods of learning. To that end, the government of Brazil started in 1991 a program of indigenous education as a new model for intercultural and bilingual education with cross-cultural curricula aimed at strengthening the culture, language, native teaching and learning processes and social infrastructure as a whole. There are currently 2,500 indigenous schools in Brazil in 24 states of the Federation, attended by 177,000 students. Between 2002 and 2007, the number of indigenous students grew at a rate of 45%. In the case of secondary education, the growth was of over 600%. More than 90% of the 10,000 teachers at the indigenous schools in Brazil are themselves indigenous. With regard to higher education, the Brazilian government created affirmative action programs to facilitate access by indigenous students to public and private universities across the country. We remain firmly committed to tackling the challenge of poverty and the right to adequate nutrition. The Bolsa Família stipend and Carteira Indígena projects are also dedicated to indigenous peoples. Nearly 50,000 indigenous families are covered by Bolsa Família, and we are aiming at increasing the number of beneficiary families. The major challenge facing the government lies, however, in adapting the program to the social cultural realities of the various ethnic groups that benefit from the initiative. The Indigenous Portfolio Carteira Indígena Initiative, implemented by the Ministry of Social Development in partnership with the Ministry of the Environment and FUNAI, supports food security, income generation, and cultural enhancement projects proposed and implemented by indigenous communities themselves, fostering self-determination. More than 80% of the projects were submitted directly by indigenous organizations, and every project involves direct community participation. Regarding indigenous health, the Brazilian government established a new federal agency specifically dedicated to health care in indigenous lands, which combines all the means made available by Western science with indigenous traditional medicine. All the relevant policies concerning indigenous peoples in Brazil are the object of debate of the National Commission of Indigenous Policy, which is composed by an equal number of government officials and indigenous representatives. The Brazilian government is opening the space for indigenous protagonism in the formulation of policies that affect them. In conclusion, Madam Chair, there's still much to be done, but Brazil remains open to the constructive dialogue and cooperation with this forum and indigenous organizations, as well as all member states. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank the representative of the government of Brazil for her statement. And I call on Mr. Kenneth Deere from the North American Indigenous Caucus. Mr. Deere.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. You surprised me. I may stray from my text a little bit. I bring you greetings from the indigenous peoples of North America. The North American region is made up of two member states of the United Nations, Canada and the United States of America, as well as several hundred indigenous nations. At the meeting of the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus, in preparation for the permanent forum, participants expressed serious concerns that these member states of the region continue to ignore the United Nations imperative to recognize and implement the inherent rights of indigenous peoples. Despite being two of the richest countries in the developed world, indigenous peoples in these countries rank lowest in the quality of life indicators such as income, housing, health, education, and highest in suicide and incarceration rates. We call upon the Permanent Forum and all United Nations mechanisms and agencies to immediate,
to immediate reform of their mandates, missions, and work statements to include within their programs all indigenous peoples, including those in developed countries. Participants especially expressed concerns about national policies, programs, and practices based on racial and ethnic classification systems and laws which maintain assimilative and discriminatory social categories. These obstruct and violate the rights of indigenous nations to exercise economic and social development and their right to self-determination. These issues are clearly articulated in CRP 5, which is available to the permanent forum members, states, and all participants of this meeting. There are a number of recommendations that the permanent forum can take into consideration for their final report. In this intervention, we would like to highlight some of the most serious concerns. Our most important issue is the survival of our peoples in a region where settler states have stolen our lands, denied us our natural resources, our treaties violated, and subjected us to various forms of genocide. In order to survive, we need the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in all areas, including the areas of economic and social development. We Indigenous peoples should decide who is Indigenous and who is not. The Creator decided to put us here in North America, and states should not second-guess the Creator. The Creator did not make federally recognized tribes or status Indians. The Creator made us all Indigenous peoples. We resubmit the inclusion of a recommendation from 2009 for the permanent forum to create a task force on unrepresented and unrecognized Indigenous peoples and to report to the permanent forum at a future session. Indigenous peoples who are divided by borders is also an issue of a violation of our rights that are articulated in Article 36 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The North American Indigenous Caucus recommends that the permanent forum create an expert panel, including impacted Indigenous peoples, to examine the violent impacts and consequences of borders, border walls, drones, border infrastructure, and militarization on Indigenous peoples' lands, and the interruption of our economic, social, and spiritual relations across borders. We are concerned that national security is being used as an excuse to continually reduce the rights of Indigenous peoples. We are not terrorists. The North American Indigenous Caucus calls upon the Permanent Forum to recommend to the governments of Canada and the U.S. to eliminate all assimilation policies that further exacerbate our economic, social, and other disparities between Indigenous peoples and the non-Indigenous population. We further recommend research of the historical and ongoing destructive impacts of member states of North America of policies and laws which impose constraints upon the exercise of self-determination and sovereignty by Indigenous peoples and nations. Again, I encourage the permanent forum members to read the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus Report, CRP 5, to further understand the issues that we face and to consider the recommendations in that report. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Kenneth. I would kindly request the speakers to raise their hands as you begin your statement so that the sound engineer can recognize you. Who is speaking? I call now on Mr. Rafael Archondo, Deputy Permanent Representative of the Government of Bolivia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I will speak in Spanish. La delegación del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia quiere felicitar a la nueva presidenta de estas sesiones, la señora Miriam Cunningham, en esta décima sesión del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas. Deseamos mucho éxito a la señora Cunningham en sus labores y también les deseamos mucho éxito a los 15 nuevos expertos del foro. Señora presidenta, a partir de la promulgación de la nueva Constitución Política del Estado, el 9 de febrero de 2009, el Gobierno del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia viene implementando políticas económicas, sociales, ambientales y culturales en beneficio de los pueblos indígenas. La Constitución Política del Estado garantiza ahora la participación plena de los pueblos indígenas en la construcción del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia, respaldada por el referéndum constitucional del 25 de enero de 2009. En ese contexto, durante la gestión 2010, la nueva Asamblea Plurinacional de Bolivia ha adoptado 5 leyes fundamentales para consolidar la estructura del Estado Plurinacional. Estas leyes son las siguientes: la del Tribunal Constitucional Plurinacional, la del órgano judicial, la del régimen electoral, la del órgano electoral plurinacional y la Ley Marco de Autonomías y Descentralización. Estas cinco leyes fundamentales han permitido que los pueblos indígena originario campesinos de Bolivia consoliden y amplíen sus derechos, como ocurre en el caso específico de la consulta y cooperación, el consentimiento previo, informado y la participación política. Del mismo modo, otras disposiciones legales sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas forman parte de la estructura legal boliviana de la actualidad. Nos referimos al Convenio 169 de la OIT, a la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, la Ley contra el Racismo y toda forma de discriminación, que también fue aprobada en Bolivia y que forma parte de los objetivos de Naciones Unidas, la Ley Educativa Avelino Siñani y la Ley de Deslinde Jurisdiccional sobre la Administración de la Justicia Ordinaria y Justicia Campesina. Una de las principales autoras de esa ley es precisamente la viceministra Isabel Ortega, que está acá en Nueva York representando al gobierno y que participará también en las sesiones de este foro con su palabra. Señora Presidenta, la política de gobierno del presidente Evo Morales Ayma y del gabinete ministerial se encuentran enmarcados en el Plan Nacional de Desarrollo, a partir del cual se vienen implementando programas y proyectos sociales y económicos para la erradicación de la pobreza y el hambre. Dichos objetivos coinciden, como usted sabe, con la consecución de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio y los Objetivos del Segundo Decenio Internacional de los Pueblos Indígenas. En cuanto a tierras, en el marco del Plan Nacional de Desarrollo, el Gobierno de Bolivia tiene como eje central la erradicación de la pobreza y el hambre, particularmente de los pueblos indígenas originarios campesinos, a través de la distribución de la tierra, y en ese sentido se ha avanzado sustancialmente en el saneamiento o legalización de tierras, tanto a nivel individual y colectivo, como la priorización del acceso a la tierra para las mujeres. En los últimos 4 años de vigencia de la Ley de Reconducción Comunitaria de la Reforma Agraria, el Ministerio de Desarrollo Rural y Tierras, a través del Instituto Nacional de Reforma Agraria, saneó 76.621 hectáreas de tierra en todo el país. Por ello, en ocasión de los 4 años de aplicación de esta ley, se celebró el Día de la Movilización Agraria. Según el Instituto Nacional de Reforma Agraria, entre 2006 y 2010 se han saneado 45 millones de hectáreas en sus diferentes modalidades. En los últimos 5 años se entregaron más de 400 personerías jurídicas a organizaciones de pueblos indígenas originarios campesinos. Este es el requisito fundamental para la demanda y saneamiento de tierras. En cuanto a la educación, se aprobó la nueva ley de educación denominada Avelino Siñani y Elizardo Pérez, en honor a 2 profesores pioneros de la educación de los pueblos indígenas. Esta ley establece un modelo educativo comunitario, social y productivo que respeta la diversidad cultural y lingüística y fortalece la identidad. En el marco de la lucha contra la pobreza, con los recursos de la renta petrolera producto de la nacionalización de los hidrocarburos, se ha entregado un promedio de 227 millones de dólares en programas sociales como la renta dignidad para los mayores de 65 años, el bono Juancito Pinto, que se entrega a los niños de primero a octavo grado, y el bono Juana Zurduy, que se entrega a las madres gestantes hasta los 2 años una vez nacido el niño. Señora Presidenta, durante 2010 el Gobierno desembolsó recursos del Fondo de Desarrollo para los Pueblos Indígenas Originarios y Comunidades Campesinas que corresponden a la renta petrolera, es decir, al 5% del impuesto directo de los hidrocarburos, lo cual asciende a un equivalente de 8 millones de dólares. Esos recursos son administrados por un directorio compuesto por las organizaciones de los pueblos indígenas originarios campesinos, las comunidades interculturales y afrobolivianas de Bolivia y los miembros del Poder Ejecutivo. A través de estos proyectos se han desarrollado planes productivos de fortalecimiento técnico y proyectos sociales de distinta índole. Al mismo tiempo, el programa Evo Cumple, manejado desde la Presidencia de la República, financia otros proyectos de desarrollo a través de los municipios y a favor de los pueblos indígenas. Señora Presidenta, en relación a las recomendaciones de la situación específica del Chaco, el Gobierno del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia proporciona información sustantiva siguiendo las recomendaciones de la 9ª sesión del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas. Es así que en relación al Chaco boliviano,
El Ministerio de Salud y Deportes ha fortalecido la política pública de salud familiar, comunitaria, intercultural, bajo los principios de participación comunitaria, intersectorialidad, interculturalidad e integralidad, que ha implementado la segunda brigada Fronteras Saludables, que recorrió la zona del Chaco, compuesta por personal de distintas dependencias del Estado. Esta tarea se hizo en coordinación con la Agencia de Desarrollo de las Macroregiones y Zonas Fronterizas y con el apoyo de las Fuerzas Armadas. Se ha logrado atender, en cuanto a salud, a 13.271 indígenas, guaraníes y huenayeques de la zona. En cuanto al Chaco, durante la gestión del Ministerio de Trabajo también se han implementado dos programas de carácter nacional para apoyar en la disminución de las peores formas de trabajo infantil y apoyar en la erradicación de la servidumbre, el trabajo forzoso y otras formas análogas de explotación. Por ello, se han fortalecido inspectorías de trabajo en toda la zona del Chaco. A su vez, la Jefatura Regional de Trabajo de Camiri realizó inspecciones laborales a 5 haciendas en la región de Alto Parapetí por denuncias de incumplimiento de normas laborales y sociales de trabajadores guaraníes. Se lograron identificar 70 haciendas, las cuales serán sujetas a futuras inspecciones laborales. Para finalizar, en cuanto a tierras en la región del Chaco, a través del Tribunal Agrario Nacional se han dotado recientemente de 23.946 hectáreas de las tierras revertidas a haciendas con relaciones servidumbrales a favor de las tierras comunitarias de origen. Sumadas a la superficie que fueron dotadas, en la actualidad suman 70.937 hectáreas, con lo que la zona ya está saneada aproximadamente en un 80%. Finalmente, en el tema de justicia, a partir de la idea del pluralismo jurídico y de la promulgación de la Ley de Deslinde Jurisdiccional, se desarrollarán en el Chaco políticas de coordinación y cooperación entre jurisdicción indígena originaria campesina con la jurisdicción ordinaria y la agroambiental. De esa manera se está poniendo en implementación esta ley tan importante a fin de proporcionar justicia a los pueblos indígenas del Chaco. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. I thank the representative of the government of Bolivia and I call on Ms. Susana Geliga from the Global Women Indigenous Caucus.
Hello. Honorable Madam Chairperson, members of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished representatives of Indigenous peoples, sisters and brothers here today. Indigenous women have a special relationship with and responsibilities towards Mother Earth and the well-being of our communities. Therefore, we are honored to share with you our perspective on the implementation of the recommendations of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues on Environment, and we respectfully request that our recommendations be added to the final report. Our first recommendation: we recognize the report of the first International Indigenous Women's Environmental Toxins and Reproductive Health Symposium held on June 30th to July 1st, 2010 in Alamo, California, contained in CPR 9 for the 10th session of the Permanent Forum, which called attention to and proposed strategies to address the critical health, environmental, and human rights impacts of toxic contaminants, which disproportionately affect Indigenous women, children, infants, and unborn generations. We support and call upon the UN Permanent Forum to endorse and co-sponsor a second international symposium on the same issues, as well as to include the presentation of the report of the first symposium and its recommendations in the final report of the 11th session to the UN Permanent Forum. In addition, we call on the Permanent Forum to support the development of a strong, legally binding international treaty to eliminate the introduction of mercury into the environment, and that this process currently underway through UNEP include the full and active participation of Indigenous peoples, including women. Number two, given the environmental degradation has an alarming impact on the health of Indigenous peoples, we call upon the Permanent Forum to follow up on its multiple recommendations to the UN system throughout the years by making Indigenous peoples' health a special theme in an upcoming session in which the following issues, among others, are addressed: infant mortality, reproductive rights, traditional midwifery, sterilization, domestic abuse, addiction, suicide, and HIV/AIDS. We reiterate the importance of having desegregated data on the indigenous infants, children, and mothers based on criterion relating to ethnicity, cultural affiliation, and language. We also reiterate the need to look at these issues as they relate to environmental degradation and the lack of access to traditional medicines and health systems, as well as to the sacred sites for healing. We recommend that the permanent forum reiterates to the UN system and states the importance of recognizing the unique contributions made by Indigenous women within our families, communities, and nations, and at the international level regarding the possession and transmission of traditional knowledge amongst and in between generations, on the conservation of biodiversity and sustainable environmental management, as it is stated in paragraph 106 of the report of the Permanent Forum's fourth session. We urge the Permanent Forum to maintain the principles of common but differentiated responsibilities, equity, social justice, and sustainable development, and development with identity as key principles, underpinning the negotiation policies and programs on climate change, which is in paragraph 10, report of the Permanent Forum seventh session. The human rights-based approach to development and the ecosystem approach should guide the design and implementation of local, national, regional, and global climate policies and projects. The crucial role of Indigenous women and Indigenous youth in developing mitigation and adaptation measures should also be included. We urge the Permanent Forum to call upon the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and relevant parties to develop mechanisms for Indigenous peoples' participation as appropriate in all aspects of the international dialogue on climate change. As it is stated in paragraph 30 of the seventh session's report, we support that the Permanent Forum encourages dialogue and cooperation among Indigenous peoples, particularly Indigenous women and youth, states, conservation and development organizations, and donors, in order to strengthen the full and effective participation of Indigenous peoples in dialogues on climate change, ensuring financial and appropriate translations. We reject the proposed policies and initiatives to reduce emissions from deforestation and forest degradation and enhance carbon stocks, REDD+, as part of the Green Economy Initiative, as these compel us to safeguard the rights of women, including those enshrined in the UN Convention to eliminate all forms of discrimination against women, such as CEDAW. We would like to thank you for your time and consideration of these recommendations. Thank you.
I call now on Ms. Gabriela Cardoso Estrada from the Government of Mexico.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Al ser esta la primera vez que toma la palabra mi delegación, pongo de manifiesto que México se suma a las felicitaciones, señora Mirna Cunningham, por su nombramiento como presidenta de este décimo periodo de sesiones, así como a los demás miembros de la mesa. Aprovecho este momento para extender un fraternal saludo a todos los expertos del foro permanente, en particular a los que inician sus gestiones para el periodo 2011-2013. En materia de desarrollo económico y social, en el caso de México, el Plan Nacional de Desarrollo 2007-2012 indica incorporar plenamente a los pueblos y a las comunidades indígenas al desarrollo económico, social y cultural del país con respeto a sus tradiciones históricas y enriqueciendo con su patrimonio cultural a toda la sociedad. Por su parte, el Programa para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas 2009-2012 tiene como principio estructural el apartado B del artículo segundo de la Constitución Política de los Estados Unidos Mexicanos, donde se establece que la superación de los rezagos económicos y sociales y el desarrollo integral y sustentable de los pueblos y las comunidades indígenas son responsabilidad de las instituciones del Estado mexicano en sus tres órdenes de gobierno. Además, señala que la Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas, CDI, dependencia rectora en materia de políticas públicas para el desarrollo dirigidas a los pueblos indígenas, promoverá el desarrollo territorial coordinando planes de desarrollo sustentable de largo plazo en regiones indígenas con la participación de estas. En respuesta, en 2010, la CDI lanzó la Estrategia de Planeación y Gestión del Territorio para el Desarrollo con Identidad, la cual busca impulsar el desarrollo de 54 microrregiones indígenas mediante igual número de planes de desarrollo microrregional a partir de proyectos estratégicos establecidos por los propios pueblos y comunidades indígenas. El objetivo 2 del Programa para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas 2009-2012 refiere a la superación de los rezagos sociales que afectan a la población indígena a través de la ampliación de la cobertura y la adecuación cultural de los programas y acciones sectoriales. En atención a ello, el Gobierno Federal, a través de la CDI, dirige a la población indígena los siguientes programas. Fondos Regionales Indígenas. Impulsa el desarrollo social y económico de los pueblos y comunidades indígenas con respeto a los recursos naturales de su entorno, sus culturas y derechos, mediante la canalización de recursos económicos en apoyo de iniciativas productivas que garanticen mejorar sus condiciones de vida. Incide en el fortalecimiento del desarrollo económico de los productores indígenas mediante la inversión pública federal. El programa Organización Productiva para Mujeres Indígenas contribuye a mejorar las condiciones de vida de las mujeres indígenas que habitan en localidades de alta y muy alta marginación, impulsando y fortaleciendo su organización vinculada a un proyecto productivo. El programa de coordinación para el apoyo a la producción indígena busca mejorar los ingresos y elevar la calidad de vida de la población indígena, incrementando sus actividades económicas mediante la instalación de proyectos productivos sustentables consensados. El programa de infraestructura básica para la atención de los pueblos indígenas, conjuntamente con los gobiernos estatales y municipales, dota de obras de infraestructura básica a localidades indígenas que observan carencias y rezagos en comunicación terrestre, electrificación, agua potable y saneamiento. La CDI impulsa como uno de sus principios básicos incluir el enfoque de equidad de género en los programas y acciones que desarrolla, a fin de revertir la mayor desventaja y rezago que hoy viven las mujeres indígenas. Asimismo, a través de sus programas, proyectos y acciones, promueve la valoración y el respeto de las culturas y lenguas indígenas como elemento fundamental para construir un diálogo intercultural y con ello contribuir a eliminar la discriminación hacia la población indígena. Señora Presidenta, existen importantes esfuerzos del Gobierno Federal de México en términos de acciones, programas y proyectos dirigidos a reducir los índices de marginación, rezago y pobreza de la población indígena así como para mejorar sus condiciones de desarrollo económico y social. No obstante lo anterior, se reconoce el reto que representa para nuestro país que la población indígena alcance los niveles de bienestar de la población media a nivel nacional y que sus indicadores no permanezcan por debajo de la misma. En los resultados del 13º Censo General de Población y Vivienda 2010, se observa una cierta mejoría en los indicadores indígenas con relación a los del último conteo de población y vivienda de 2005. Tal es el caso de los siguientes indicadores de población en localidades con 40% y más de población indígena. Con servicios de salud, en 2005 se tenía un 23%, en tanto en 2010 se reporta un 58.2%, en contraste con el 64.6% del total de la población a nivel nacional. Con escolaridad, en 2005 había un 74.8% y en 2010 se alcanza un 79.5%, en contraste con el 92.8% a nivel nacional. Que sepa leer y escribir, en 2005 se presentaba un 71.7%, en 2010 se obtiene un 76.1% y la media nacional es del 93.1%. De igual manera, en los indicadores de las viviendas de localidades con 40% y más de población indígena, se observa que en 2005 contaban con electricidad 86.6%, en tanto que en 2010 se reporta un 91.3%, en contraste con el 97.7% de la media nacional. Con agua, en 2005 había un 65.5% y en 2010 se alcanza un 68.9%, la media nacional 88.1%. Con drenaje, en 2005 se alcanzó el 42.7% y en 2010 un 54.4%, la media nacional 90.2%. El presupuesto para la atención de la población indígena ha experimentado un incremento continuo a partir de 2001. Sin embargo, el ritmo en los últimos 4 años ha sido más vigoroso. En 2010 fue de 44.368.3 millones y en 2011 se incrementa a 49.101.2 millones. Para finalizar mi intervención, el Gobierno de México, a través de la CDI y de muchas otras dependencias que suman sus esfuerzos con esta, coordinan sus programas y presupuestos para construir una acción convergente que contribuya tanto al desarrollo integral como a la efectiva promoción y vigencia de los derechos indígenas garantizados en el artículo 2 constitucional. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. I call on Ms. Tine Smith from Deputy Permanent Representative of the Government of Norway.
Participation in decision-making processes is of fundamental importance. To be consulted is a precondition for realizing the rights of a vast number of indigenous peoples. The objective of consultations should be to obtain the consent of the indigenous people concerned. There is a need to frame national consultation procedures so that consensus can be built. In 2005, the Norwegian government and the Sami parliament, the Sametinget, agreed on procedures for consultations between the state authorities and Sametinget. The agreement was recently referred to as an example of good practice by the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Professor James Anaya, in his report from the visit to the Sami areas in Norway, Sweden, and Finland last year. At the moment, a proposal to adopt specific rules governing the consultation process in national legislation is under consideration. Each year, the Sami Digi is consulted on a significant number of cases, resulting in agreement in all but a few. The most recent example where agreements was reached was a case regarding coastal and fjord fishing. Last week, the Ministry of Fisheries and Coastal Affairs and the Sami Digi agreed on measures to strengthen the local fisheries and management in the northernmost areas of Norway. This agreement includes the establishment of a right to fish on certain terms in the sea outside the Finnmark county and in Sami areas in the counties of Troms and Norland. The parties agreed that they have a different understanding of whether this proposed right should be based on historical usage and international law concerning indigenous peoples. The parties have, however, chosen to disregard the disagreement on principles and concentrate their efforts on reaching agreement that can provide for increased fishing possibilities for local people in these areas. The proposals will be considered by the Sami Digi during its plenary session in June this year. After that, the Ministry will present the proposals to the Norwegian Parliament. Norway is a strong supporter of the work in the UN on the issues of human rights and transnational corporations and other business enterprises. We welcome the study of the permanent forum members, which examines existing mechanisms and policies related to indigenous peoples and corporations. We will here like to draw particular attention to the work of the Special Representative of the Secretary General on Business and Human Rights, Professor John Ruggie. The aim of his work has been to provide better protection against corporate-related human rights abuses. By introducing the UN Framework for Business and Human Rights, Protect, Respect and Remedy, Professor Ruggie has contributed to defining with greater clarity the roles and responsibilities that states and companies have in protecting and respecting human rights. In his last report to the Human Rights Council, Professor Ruggie presents the guiding principles for the implementation of his framework. As a main sponsor of the mandate on business and human rights, Norway supports the guiding principles to be endorsed by the Human Rights Council in next session in June. This is of utmost importance if we are to ensure that the role of the UN in this area remains authoritative. We appreciate the cooperation between Professor Ruggie and Professor Anaya. Professor Anaya devoted much of his report to the Human Rights Council last year to corporate responsibility with respect to indigenous people's rights. He put forward several relevant recommendations to both corporations and states. States are obliged to protect against human rights abuses committed by third parties and bear the main responsibility for conducting consultations with indigenous peoples. However, third parties have a responsibility to respect the rights of indigenous peoples as well. Corporations must ensure that they do not contribute to violations of these rights. In this regard, Norway finds the recommendations in the report on the exercise of due diligence by corporations particularly useful. Exercising due diligence is not only essential to corporations' responsibility to respect indigenous rights, but it is also in the corporation's self-interest as a means of preventing conflicts and avoiding reputational risk. Norway welcomes the recent initiative taken by Professor Anaya to collect experiences regarding the effects of natural resource extraction and development projects on the rights of indigenous peoples. In Norway, the government last month presented a white paper on Norwegian state ownership in global economy. The Norwegian state expects all companies in which it has an ownership interest to respect human rights, including the rights of indigenous peoples in all their activities. The government also expects companies to take steps to ensure that their suppliers and partners are acting in line with international norms. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. Regarding our organization of work, I would like to inform that the interpreters have agreed to remain with us until 6:10 p.m. I thank them for their flexibility. If we need an additional time to conclude our meeting, we can continue beyond 6:10, but only in English. I will call now on Mr. Saul Vicente, member of the Permanent Forum.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Quiero aprovechar para unirme a las felicitaciones que han expresado por su nominación como presidenta del Foro Permanente, así como a las felicitaciones para mis colegas del Foro Permanente. En primer lugar, quiero también dar la bienvenida a mis hermanas y hermanos indígenas que están presentes y pudieron hacer el esfuerzo para llegar a esta sesión. Asimismo, quiero aprovechar la oportunidad para reconocer a los gobiernos que han hecho uso de la palabra y que han expresado los avances que han desarrollado en sus países respecto a las recomendaciones que ha formulado este foro permanente, así como de las políticas y programas que están impulsando en sus respectivos países. De igual manera, quiero externar mi reconocimiento a las agencias de Naciones Unidas que en este día han expresado a todos nosotros los avances que están desarrollando respecto a las recomendaciones que ha hecho este foro permanente. Pero también, y llama la atención, las propuestas, las iniciativas y recomendaciones que han formulado nuestros hermanos indígenas de los diferentes caucus en las diferentes regiones, la cual me llama la atención por las diferentes planteamientos y recomendaciones que están haciendo y que al mismo tiempo toma cierta distancia de los avances que tanto en las agencias de Naciones Unidas como en los propios países están impulsando. De tal manera que, aprovechando esta ocasión, quisiera poner a consideración de los miembros de este foro permanente, tomemos muy en cuenta las observaciones y recomendaciones que están formulando los caucus indígenas sobre el tema 3 que estamos analizando. Al mismo tiempo, quiero señalar que, en efecto, una de las agencias que hizo su intervención, la Organización para la Alimentación y la Agricultura, ha informado de la aprobación de su política sobre pueblos indígenas y tribales en la FAO en el año 2010. El día de hoy está terminando un proceso de consulta que impulsó la FAO para la adopción de las directrices voluntarias sobre la buena gobernanza en la tenencia de la tierra y los recursos naturales. Al respecto, quisiera poner a consideración de este foro permanente, considera la posibilidad de recomendar a la FAO dos puntos específicos. El primero es que las guías no se llamaran voluntarias, porque aquí lo que se ha recomendado es que todos los instrumentos jurídicos, las políticas y los programas de las agencias de Naciones Unidas estén basadas sobre la base de los derechos humanos y los derechos reconocidos actualmente a los pueblos indígenas. Por lo tanto, establecer unas directrices políticas de manera voluntaria no expresará lo que está establecido en nuestra Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Asimismo, como segundo punto que quiero poner a consideración de ustedes, es que le pueda recomendar a la FAO que, atendiendo a la política aprobada en el año 2010, en la cual me felicito de que se cuenta con una política que considera lo establecido en el artículo 42, debo señalar que en la revisión que he hecho del documento de directrices sobre tenencia de la tierra y recursos naturales, el tema de pueblos indígenas no está considerado con el lenguaje establecido en los instrumentos jurídicos de derechos humanos y de derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Por lo tanto, sería conveniente recomendar a la FAO para que en la revisión del borrador cero, cuya consulta está terminando el día de hoy, considere y establezca la armonización de su lenguaje de ese documento con lo establecido en los estándares internacionales de derechos humanos y particularmente de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas establecidos en la Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y del Convenio 169 de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Muchas gracias, Saúl Vicente. I will call now on Ms. Hannah Donnelly from Oxfam International on behalf of several NGOs.
Organizations Network of Australia reiterates the need for the Permanent Forum to remain vigilant in its efforts to implement the recommendations made in relation to economic and social development, particularly those that include developed frameworks such as the Program of Action for the Second Decade of the World's Indigenous Peoples, the Millennium Development Goals, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and the International Labour Organization Convention 169. The end goal should be to achieve parity with the mainstream economic and social development experience while taking into account the limiting nature of mainstream ideology and its effects on Indigenous peoples' capacity to engage and leverage development opportunities. Therefore, we also reinforce the need for the UN system and states to financially support the efforts of Indigenous peoples in consolidating their own development models, concepts and practices, such as the United Nations Development Programme. Economic and social development strategies must be reinforced by principles and programs that promote sustainability, reduction in poverty and overcoming disadvantage. States need to understand and accept that economic and social development does not necessarily mean profit. In some instances, outcomes will be in the form of sustainability, community-controlled development or entrepreneurial activity. The Australian Government has recently commenced a process to design an Indigenous economic development strategy. Strategies such as these must be developed in accordance with the Declaration, particularly our right to determine our own priorities and strategies. They must also be developed with the active participation of Indigenous peoples, with appropriate support by states, and without Indigenous peoples having to relocate. Indigenous peoples are the most disadvantaged group in Australia by all social indicators. The majority of the assets of Indigenous peoples in Australia remain owned or under the control of the state. This control is further supported by policies where government requires security of tenure through long-term leases over our land in order for them to provide funding for infrastructure and community development programs. There is an urgent need to move beyond models where states continue to control the lives of Indigenous peoples to models that promote our right to determine and develop our economic and social development priorities and to have them administered by our own institutions. We remain concerned that there has been an overall failure of government policies, strategies and programs across the areas of education, employment and training. Capacity building of individuals and communities is a crucial requirement in increasing Indigenous people's ability to access social and economic development opportunities. We recommend that the Permanent Forum urge all states to use the Declaration as the framework to guide the development of economic and social development strategies. To urge all states to provide financial and technical assistance to Indigenous peoples and organisations to assist them to fully realise their social, cultural and economic development aspirations in accordance with Article 39 of the Declaration. We urge all states to consult and cooperate effectively in good faith with affected Indigenous peoples through their own representative institutions in order to obtain their free, prior and informed consent before adopting and implementing any development strategies in accordance with Article 19 of the Declaration. To urge all states to work with Indigenous peoples, their representatives and other organisations to identify and develop capacity building opportunities at all levels, with particular consideration given to skill development and adequate resourcing. to urge states to review laws, policies, and programs that affect our lands, territories, and resources to ensure consistency with the Declaration and to facilitate greater control and independent ownership of the Indigenous estate by Indigenous peoples to determine our own economic and social development priorities in accordance with Article 32 of the Declaration. To urge all states to work with UN agencies to ensure that all Indigenous peoples have access to support from programs such as UNDP and urge UN agencies to facilitate greater access to their work and outcomes by all Indigenous peoples and their communities. We recommend to the Economic and Social Council to urge the Human Rights Council to request a Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples conduct a thematic study on economic and social development with particular consideration on the quadruple bottom line, that is economic, social, cultural and environmental development and practical implementation of economic and social rights at the community level. And finally, recommend to the Economic and Social Council to work closely with the Human Rights Council and the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples to develop detailed, practical guidance that informs state processes in the development of strategies to implement the Declaration at the national and community level. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. We only have two more statements, but we will put them on the list for tomorrow, and because I intend to adjourn this meeting, I would ask you to make announcements, if you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to give some information about the day passes which are being issued as of tomorrow. So the passes for each morning session will be issued between 8:30 and 10 a.m., and they'll be distributed in the visitors' lobby of the UN. The passes for the side events will be issued between 10 a.m. and 1:15 p.m., and the passes for each afternoon session will be issued between 1:15 and 3:15 p.m. And I'd also like to announce that there will be the IP Global Caucus meeting from 8:30 to 9:45 a.m. tomorrow at the Church Center on the second floor.
Thank you. Tomorrow morning we shall begin our discussion on item 3B of the agenda. The meeting will take place in this conference room. So have a very good evening, and this meeting is adjourned.